Blog Talk Radio has to say hello. They got to do that thing they do. Oh, that thing you do.
Hey.
That's a movie.
What do you know?
That's a movie that references nothing for us.
Yeah.
The whole movie's references. But Lee Capreas is here with me.
Lee Capreas, hello.
Hi, Lee. Okay. And
hello,
we're going to be joined by one of my favorite people in the world, one of our favorite guests of all time, Jen Candy.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Hi, guys.
So I got to do the whole rundown here. I got to do the www.thematthewaronshow.com. At Matt Aaron Show's on Twitter. What is with you and the phone? Are you talking to some chick that's seven states away that you're never going to see?
Yeah, a girl.
That you're never going to see because you've never met a girl in L.A.
I have.
You have 28 girls in different parts of the country you can't afford to go to.
It's still 4 o'clock. It's not 4:01 yet, okay? I just shut the thing off. I said, baby,
I know, but I got
to talk later.
No, this isn't about that. It's about why can't you meet a girl in L.A.? Why do you have seven girls across the country spread out, none in L.A.?
I don't meet them at massage parlors like you do.
Well, that's Craigslist where you meet them.
And then you meet at the massage parlor.
At Matt Aaron Show on Twitter. Go to Facebook, the search bar, you type in the Matthew Aaron Show, and you'll click like over there. We're on Stitcher. You can catch us on Stitcher and do what I do, listen to us, listen to the BBC. iTunes, please leave your remarks for us. No bloviating, right? What else are we on? We're on everything, aren't we? Instagram,
@MattAaronShow.
Or you could check out my workout selfies at MatthewAaron83.
Christ.
MatthewAaron83 on the Twitter. I mean, the Instagram. The Instagram, yeah.
When you post them, do people still comment on them?
Yes. Last night I posted a picture. I had 50 likes in a minute.
Oh, God.
Yes. It's quite the ego boost. I'll tell you something.
It's an impressive transformation.
I'm almost done with Facebook. I'm going to strictly be Instagramming now.
From humble working class guy to narcissistic
Man
Hollywood personality. Yes.
That's right. That's right. Jen follows.
You're completely
She knows I go to the tanning salon.
All right. You're one of them. You're one of the likers.
You know what, Jen? As a Chicago City girl, what do you make of all that kind of stuff? The tanning salons, the gym working out?
My only advice is just don't become too L.A.
Okay, I won't become too L.A.
You have to remember...
I'm hanging out with you, aren't I?
I know, and
you're not L.A.
No, I'm not. I'm L.A. But just remember your roots. That's all I have to say.
I remember them.
Okay.
I remember them, and hopefully my roots remember me.
Right.
You know what I hate, though? I'll tell you what I don't like. I'll tell you what I don't like is the haters because of the selfies and stuff. But it all comes from people that don't work out or anything. So I don't think they count. If people that work out send me messages, they're like, bro, too many workout selfies. I don't hear from Frank Grillo that I work out too much and post too much about it. Well, it's a motivation tactic.
Well,
if you post every day a picture of yourself, the moment you notice yourself weaker, You know, you're going to get your ass in gear.
You framed that remark in the precise...
You done fucking with my headphones? Yeah, I'm good.
You have framed that remark in the precise, vain way that your accusers are being... Yeah. It's like you can't frame a response to the haters in any way that doesn't...
No, I don't think there's a legitimate reason.
They're not taking issue with your body.
First of all, choose to follow me. Don't follow me.
Right.
One. Two.
I've never posted a negative comment about you.
No one has.
No.
I mean, necessarily.
Nothing that you're doing is negative.
But, no.
It's just overly positive. We can't take too much positivity.
Listen, if any of you fawning sycophants on Facebook who are constantly complimenting each other's pecs, abs, and cloits on a daily basis feel that Matt is truly looking fabu every single picture he posts every 6 hours, then feel free to let him know it. But you're part of this
you'll take it.
this look at me pool. Working out isn't enough. Working out in public with mirrors everywhere isn't enough. It's still not
self-congratulatory
enough.
Everywhere. Oh. I know guys that go to the gym that put on what do you call it, like Vaseline or whatever, they shine in front of the mirror.
Uh-huh.
But they act like they're not wearing it, like it's sweat or something. Yeah. But it's Vaseline. In that shiny.
Well, we all put Vaseline on. It's
from
great.
From time to time, it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you put Vaseline on at the gym, Jen?
Yes, I do.
A base coat. Just a base coat.
Just then you get the sweat glistening afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, we're here at 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay, Chicago, here in Burbank, California. I always almost say Burbank, Illinois. I almost say it all the time, even though Burbank, Illinois is like the size of my hand.
And it's not 103 right now.
Yeah, right. That's true.
It could be, though.
It's hot here, though, too, right?
Ridiculous.
It's pretty hot. It's like, what, 103 for real?
According to my car, it was 103.
Was the car sitting outside?
Well, no, I was driving.
Oh, all day you've been driving?
Most of
the
day.
So that's a pretty accurate temperature.
It's a pretty accurate gauge. It wasn't, you know, sitting inside in the garage.
Okay. Wow. So thank you, Arlene and Joe Montana, for having us as usual.
Yes.
You do the mini deep dish. That's what I say. I think that's a big seller too, right? Mini deep dish?
Yeah.
Do they do the heart shape one here?
We did that for Valentine's Day
for my husband.
See?
But we ordered it because I didn't know I could pick it up here, so we did the whole
delivery. They do deliver.
I don't know if it came from here or if it did come from Chicago. I'm hoping it came from Chicago.
That's interesting. I don't know.
I'm going to call up Lou's in Lincolnwood and have them deliver to me here.
You should.
Yeah.
Oh.
I think they will. They got the Chicago dogs, the Vienna beefs. Come on, you can't get Vienna beef anywhere else in this town, probably.
No.
Italian beef. You're all set. Come to taste Chicago. Jen Candy.
Hello.
I am so excited to see you.
I am too.
Because I haven't talked to you in forever.
Right.
You got married.
Yep.
Yeah.
Got hitched.
As I've joked on the show numerous times about where's Jen Candy, she's been on
honeymoon
for a year.
Yep.
Wow.
Longest honeymoon ever.
Wish it was still in Maui the whole entire time, but sadly no.
Man.
Is that where you went for your honeymoon, Maui?
A year wasn't enough to satisfy you.
Yeah, you did the Maui thing?
We did the Maui thing.
Yeah, how was that?
It was fabulous.
You go to one of those private islands, or did you go
to
like...
No, we went to Maui. Like, we stayed in Wailea.
Oh, okay.
Did a little golfing.
Wailea, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Did you go to any other islands? Did he just ask that five seconds ago?
Yes, I did.
He did, okay. But it's okay.
All right.
You can ask. We see that you're paying attention.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. No, we didn't. We just realized after planning a wedding, we don't want to go anywhere. We want to unpack our bags, stay for a week, and then not go anywhere.
How was the food in Hawaii?
Oh my God, it was amazing.
Come on, really?
Really?
Because Hawaiian food
is
hit or miss.
Yes.
The pig roast is great, but
You can't go wrong with a good pig roast.
But you can't do the poi. I personally can't do the poi.
Oh, poi's good.
No.
Oh, I love it.
Fish paste, come on.
Oh, but it's got that sesame stuff.
What are you going to put poi on? What do you put it on?
They put it on the pork and they put it...
They put it in every... It's like a main thing that goes in everything. It's like cream cheese. You just do a lot of stuff with it.
But it's pink and it's fish paste.
It's made of fish.
Oh, maybe I've had it before then. I don't realize it.
We, a long time ago when our family took a vacation there, my dad wanted to have an authentic Easter meal.
Okay.
It consisted of like fish
and
broth.
And your dad, of course, Bill Murray.
Yes, of course. Right. Like, that is my father.
Right.
And he...
I loved him in Spies Like Us.
right.
But yeah, so we did that and it was horrible. So we all had mac and cheese afterwards.
Okay. Hey.
Even your dad didn't like poi?
No. But he was...
See, if Jen Candy liked
it,
I honestly would probably like it.
He tried it, though.
He tried it.
Yeah.
He didn't realize that none of us liked it, as we sat down.
He tried it and wasn't a huge fan from the sound of it.
No.
What else? So you did this honeymoon. Are you back at work?
Back at work.
All right. What are you working on?
Multiple different projects. Was up in Toronto.
Really?
Yeah, which
Look
is exciting.
Look at you.
I know.
Look
like
at multiple different projects.
I'm like, well, that's because of...
I'm in demand. I was in the honeymoon for a year.
There's nothing going on before. So it's like, wait, you want me? Okay, that's great. Did a pilot up in Toronto.
Really?
Cool.
A comedy?
Comedy.
Really?
Yeah.
Look at you.
It was a pilot presentation, so we didn't shoot the whole entire pilot.
How does that work? How's the presentation
pilot
work?
Presentation, it was a 10-minute pilot, kind of so that they can chop it around to all the networks, and they can say, hey, we want it, we don't want it.
So this is interesting. If you've got a new show, they don't just take a one sheet anymore. That's what we're finding out. They want a slick multimedia presentation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily...
Need lots of money to make.
It's ridiculous.
But they're making television shows now. They're making a lot more content in other countries that you'd usually get content from us. But Canada is now... Do you have your own agent in Canada,
I
for
do.
Instance?
I've got a lot of content.
She has her own Canadian agent, her
I
own
have
Canadian
an agent
management.
In Canada, I don't have an agent here, which is like... But she does both, work for both. I have my commercial agent out here, But my agent, is my agent up in Toronto? Is my dad's old agent. She works for me up there.
Yeah, I think it's time for the two of us to just go to Canada
right?
and work there.
Yeah.
It's less money, but you know, we'd be working all the time.
We would be working all the time.
We can shoot Montreal for Chicago.
Vancouver.
Toronto.
Vancouver for New York, like Jackie Chan.
Yeah, right.
But did you know Vancouver, they specifically designed, or at least this is what I was told, they designed the city to look... Different parts of the city looks like different parts of cities in the United States.
Uh-huh.
So that's why everyone goes up there, because some of it looks like San Francisco.
Some of it looks like Seattle.
How do the locals feel about that?
I think that was one of their draws to getting people there
I don't know. Vancouver's supposed to be amazing.
It's gorgeous.
It's supposed to be amazing.
I went to school. I went to college in Olympia, Washington, and I never made it up there.
You never jumped?
No. Hmm. I didn't have a passport at that point.
That would be why.
Yeah, back then, yes.
Not now. No.
That would be why. So, once again, Eric LaHarvey's on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Eric LaRay Harvey.
Yeah.
Who's from Boardwalk Empire.
Boardwalk Empire, and we're going to be playing that taped interview for you, in which you can very much tell by Matt and I that it is the morning, and we have not been up long.
Yes, that's true.
Coffee hasn't kicked in.
No. We're
tea people.
I had a lot of tea right before the interview. So we have Eric LaRay Harvey coming on, and we have Jonathan Holliff coming on, and you and Lee and I, we watched this film, The Man in Black.
My father and the man in black.
Because it's about Jonathan Holliff's father.
Yep.
And it's about Johnny Cash. And we're going to be talking about that live from Taste Chicago here at 603 North Hollywood Way,
Burbank, California.
Johnny's one of your guys. Yeah. I like how you say that like it's cutting edge and you're like the guy that likes Johnny Cash. Well, Nobody else before you.
It's a big deal for me because I don't know dick about music.
Yeah.
So, I get to say something that I love.
You know more about music than you
typical,
lead on.
I'm a typical comedian who's antisocial and likes jazz. The music of the antisocial person.
All right.
So, it's, you know.
Are you a Johnny Cash fan? Yeah.
Yeah, ever since I was little, I think. It was something my dad introduced us to, and then I started listening to him. And
how does your dad introduce you to Johnny Cash?
We would go to Blockbuster Music, and he would just buy tons and tons of CDs.
Yeah.
And he'd be like, okay, here, listen
to
these.
Oh, like when CDs came out, your dad was like nuts about it, right?
Oh, my God,
he's like, I gotta get them all.
in like a Blockbuster, because Blockbuster used to sell music back in the day.
Yeah, they used to have music, right.
And we would go in, and we'd spend hours there, and he'd just, you know, he'd be like, okay, listen to this, educate yourself, and
That's good. He's only buying you the reading material.
Right.
He's not responsible for reading it to you.
Right.
No. Go educate yourself. That's great. So you guys would buy a lot of Johnny Cash. What else would your dad buy? Like, what was he big on?
Do you know what? Simon and Garfunkel was like another something that he absolutely loved. The Beatles, of course.
Yeah.
Do
you feel like Simon and Garfunkel's more L.A. or New York?
Ooh.
I feel kind of L.A. when I listen to Simon and Garfunkel.
They span coasts and generations.
I know they do. I know they do. But I just feel like it's an L.A. sound for that time.
It is, but for me, because my first concert was Simon and Garfunkel, but in Toronto.
So it's Toronto for you.
It's Toronto.
It's Toronto music.
Right.
I don't know. There's very few bands to me that scream like a section of America, but they're one of them that's kind of like... I mean, of course, they have their famous album from New York where they did the live Central Park album.
Right.
But outside of that, when you listen to, like, Simon and Garfunkel, especially Paul Simon, you definitely get an L.A., like, vibe.
And then also because of the music was played in so many nostalgic, you know, movies.
Yeah, not even... Well, first, The Graduate, of course, is
so
their breakout.
Very much is.
Which is
right.
A California
but even,
California.
Even Paul's solo stuff.
Right.
You know.
Of course.
Oh, it's all very L.A.
Yeah.
So if you want to be truly an L.A. sellout, you can love Paul Simon like everyone else, like Larry David, like everybody else in town that's like, I love Paul Simon. Because everyone claims they're not L.A. sellouts, but everyone sells out a little. True?
You have to.
What have you sold out with?
Oh, my gosh. What haven't I
sold out
with? We
know I sold out with the working out and the tanning.
I do.
What did you sell out with? I sold out with
the juice cleanses and you know, the pressed juicers and all those places.
Have you been to Pressed?
Yes.
How great is Pressed?
They're amazing.
We're going to give them a free plug here.
I
love Pressed. What do you get there? All kinds of juices.
I get all the roots. I get everything.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You get the root juices, and then the funny thing is you can also get, I get this vanilla almond.
Oh, the vanilla almond milk.
The protein way.
Yep.
It has the protein. It's fantastic.
I know. So I sold out with the juices.
Good for you.
I
good
love
for
them.
You because they're delicious.
Well, they're so good.
They're delicious and healthy.
Yeah.
They're meal replacements. They're great. Lee, where do you sell out?
I kind of just sell out sort of in little bursts throughout the day.
Yeah, like what?
Kind of. Well, you mean you plug these things that you really like? Is that you mean selling out by that way? Selling out is in this culture, selling out has a lot of different meanings. You can sell out in more ways than ever. So I need to know precisely.
Man,
what you mean.
Man, you know
by
how to take
out
a fun segment and just fucking drill holes in it and bore it to death.
Selling out.
Out is selling out. Like cliche
LA,
typical like
LA
selling
something
out.
That you would never be caught.
Oh, you mean
okay.
Like that? Oh, okay.
I do regular yoga style meditation.
There
good.
You go.
Very LA.
There
good.
You go. And you do that, and it's
yeah.
Very LA.
It's good
do
for
you
my
do
back.
It at home or do you go somewhere?
He does
I do
it at home,
okay.
Though.
Yeah. Although I would not be averse to taking yoga classes or going somewhere.
I will say
publicly.
The only kind of thing
nude.
Other than that I noticed you've sold out at, which is like, but it's so minimal because you were like this before L.A. So it was kind of like, it looks like selling out, but he's always been this way.
Go on.
Is he's very much, like myself too, but this is not us selling out, into the art music scene, like the indie scene, indie film scene.
Right.
And like people would think, oh, they love, you know, they turned into these L.A. cinephiles. No,
right.
We were like that before
no,
we came out here.
We were giant dorks before.
And right. One of the pleasant surprises about living in L.A. is the movie theaters are the best in the country.
Yeah, I agree.
They're amazing.
They're the best in the country, as well as they should be.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
For
so,
$18.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right.
Where do you go? Which theater you go? Don't tell me you go to Arclight. But you said $18,
no.
So I'm guessing it's an Arclight.
No,
or
I go to AMC at like Century
okay.
City.
Okay.
And the fanciest one that I
it's
end
okay
up going
if
to.
If you go to Arclight.
I went to Arclight. Wasn't
yeah, we'll forgive
super
you.
Thrilled
it's not
with
that
it.
Great.
It was
for
like,
$4 more. You're like, what am I getting?
No, I even forget what we went to go see. It was like Fast and Furious or something. So we ended up, I was playing at the Arclight.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll go see that. And we were just, the seats were kind of like really.
I love how she's like, Fast and Furious is playing at the Arclight. Because
yeah.
It was not playing anywhere
those
else.
Seats,
it really wasn't.
Fast and Furious?
Those seats are kind
for
of.
For the time that we wanted.
Those seats are kind of firm, like airline
no,
seats,
I
aren't they?
Yeah.
There's something weird about those seats.
I do like going to the Lamley, though, and Pico.
Oh,
yeah.
The Lamley's great.
And the Landmark. And I got to say, I was at
or the Landmark.
Wait, which Lamley you go to, though?
No,
Santa Monica?
The one on Santa Monica is
yeah.
What I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But the, you know that the Sundance one, I kind of like it because
I love the Sundance
they do
one.
What
it's
they do at Arclight without the spiel.
But it's just expensive. It's
less,
$15 a person.
It's $13.50.
Is it $13.50?
$15 might be the weekend price.
Yeah, it's weekends.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and $13.50 is still a lot.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
Well, we were at a...
I just like it. Nobody,
you can't sneak around
nobody's
there.
Ever there because
it's... a Sundance, you can't sneak
nobody's
around.
Nobody's ever
though.
There because it's in a poor spot for a movie theater, Sunset.
Yeah, right.
And
huh.
I kind of like
there
that.
There are some industry people there. When I saw Passion the other night, Tarantino was there. And
right.
It was packed. Passion was packed.
But you saw it right when it opened, though. So yeah,
yeah but it
big
bombed.
Opening.
But it bombed terribly.
It bombed, but
like really, really badly.
Oh, it's a shame.
Yeah,
have you
it
guys
is a
hit
shame.
The Arrow yet on Montana?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. I love the Arrow. You go there for the older
the
flicks.
The older flicks that
mm-hmm.
Mel Brooks
yeah.
And
the
all that
New
stuff.
Beverly.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, but we're out here. I'm literally like blocks from here.
Well, yeah.
So, you know, I go to the Burbank AMC.
Walk to the Lamley's 15 minutes.
The Lamley's
yeah.
Literally, not even 15 minutes. Yeah, it's about that, sure.
10 minutes for a fit guy.
I forget I'm
right
a West Side girl, so everything
that's
I go to is always
right.
Over there.
Okay.
And
so
you never venture.
I know, you don't.
And people in the Valley, in Burbank area, never. They're like, oh,
it.
Let's visit.
I,
like,
I hate it.
I go all over.
So do you never like go to like Pasadena or like downtown? Or like,
from time to time I do, but...
Yeah.
Are we gonna drive,
it's
right?
A drive, and it's like one of those things that I'm not a huge, you know.
Even Malibu, I was coming from near where you live
right.
On Saturday. It took me 2 hours to get to Malibu.
It was a Labor Day weekend.
I know, but it was the worst ever.
Oh, it's horrible.
It was terrible. Well, there's no, from where you live, once you got to get to the 10.
Yes.
But once you get to the 10, there is no way to get anywhere
yeah.
because you have to take side streets everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere. And once, or Santa Monica.
The more you live here, though, the more you'll discover the side streets and what side streets work.
Sure.
Because I can get anywhere.
It's insanity.
Relatively quickly, but...
That's the one thing. That,
the construction is...
I got a shortcut for going to the beach, which is you just get off at the airport
tell
exit.
Tell everyone.
Oh, no, no, no. No, I was trying, but the problem is I went all the way into Malibu. Because I went to that chili cook-off I told you about, too. They had a carnival.
Oh, no. Oh, right.
They have the yearly chili cook-off. Yep. I went to that, and that's like, it's a good like 20 minutes into Malibu. Like, it's mid-Malibu. You're about 8 miles from the Point Dunes.
Okay.
So, you know, it's not far away. From Point Dunes is like the end of Malibu.
Yeah.
So, I love Malibu, though.
Malibu's gorgeous.
Gorgeous. The problem is, there's no work to be had over there.
Yep.
And I love Malibu, but I hate Santa Monica.
Parts of Santa Monica.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan.
It's too congested.
Or the Palisades.
Yeah. How could you not love the Palisades? Yeah. It's too quaint. It's quaint. I love the Palisades.
That's where you have a family.
I know.
Yeah.
See, but that's the state. That's where I've always been like that.
We're
though.
Not anti-quaint.
Yeah, no, I'm
anti-family,
all about quaint.
Anti-quaint. No, it's just different. I went and had lunch, like, you know, just coffee randomly with a friend yesterday.
In the Palisades?
And we go to the Village every month. We always meet there.
Because the Palisades is literally like 10 blocks long, too, like the downtown area.
We were there for 4th of July. They have a huge...
Really?
Yeah, they have, like, there was like over 300 people just for a parade.
All right, you and I are going to have a talk about the Palisades then, because I did not know that there was anything to do there. Other than hang out with rich people.
There's great hiking trails too.
Okay.
You can hike with the rich people.
If you can hike with the rich people. Okay. No, but there are some nice
they
things
probably
to
take
do
segues.
Out there.
You like hiking? You like the outdoors?
I do
stuff?
Like the outdoors.
What about
things?
The snakes? And the coyotes?
I have a rattlesnake kit.
He won't walk.
You have a rattlesnake kit.
He won't
That's
walk.
That's all you need to hear about that, pal. All right. All right. A kit.
He won't
well,
walk a trail with me because he's afraid that he's going to get
no,
bitten by
a rattlesnake.
No,
you'll be fine. Right now with the heat, you don't go. So the moment it starts cooling down in the fall, then you're okay.
Why wouldn't you go right now with the heat?
Because of the heat and the rattlesnake.
Oh, because of the rattlesnakes. Okay. Right.
That's why you stay on the trail.
Right, that
and
too.
If you see one, you
I'm
walk
sure they get on
around
the,
it.
You
I'm
can
sure
hear
they
them.
Get on the, well, I'm sure you can hear them.
Yeah. I like
sound
that.
Like rattlesnakes.
Right.
So you bring a kit for the dog.
For the dog. It's a certain trail.
What's
there's
this
some,
kit?
Should do things that
it's
scary.
It's essentially just a shot that you, if they get bit, you
oh
can inject them
God.
So that they don't
die
on you.
Now, if you, okay, if you go on a trail where there are rattlesnakes, do they have signs that say rattlesnakes
yeah,
beware?
Like a yellow sign with a snake. Like
No, they do. It's like a picture
no,
of a snake,
well,
right?
Yeah, they've got, I don't mean to scare you anymore, but
rattle.
They've got the mountain lions, the coyotes, and the rattlesnakes.
Yeah. Hiking's way better than the gym.
You can get injured at the gym.
Yeah, by your own stupidity.
Well, that
you
is
can
true.
Get injured at the gym. I'm not going to have a snake, unless it's like a sci-fi movie, sneak into the gym and try to kill me.
You know, you watch way too much CSI, because hikers always
I will
find
tell
a
you,
body.
Though, as many times as I carry the pen and all that stuff for the rattlesnake, like, I've never had to use it. I've been hiking these hills.
But
for
you've heard them?
Yeah,
see, as soon as I hear them, I'll fucking
Where do you get a rattlesnake kit? Kmart?
Walmart sells them.
Yeah, right. Walmart. Right. There's no Walmart.
They're made of Chinese lead.
What's up with that?
Well,
there's
they're,
no Walmart.
Walmarts are
in LA.
Very
there's
Midwest.
There's like one in downtown LA. There's like one in downtown LA. There's like one in the hills.
There's one on either side of LA.
There's a Kmart. There's two Kmarts and two Walmarts.
And Target.
So for everyone listening, there's tons of Target.
Yeah.
For everyone listening in Chicago and like New York and stuff though right now, they're like stupefied right now because they're not understanding. There are two Kmarts and two Walmarts in like a 50-mile radius,
two?
And I'm not joking.
But are they the Super K and then the regular Kmart? And then there's the Super Walmart.
The one in the valley's a Super K?
That's how they get away with it.
I don't know. It's just weird for me because and it's not like they're nowhere else in California.
No.
You can go up north and there's Kmarts and Walmarts everywhere.
Yeah.
It's something about L.A., and I kind of like it because I don't like Kmart and Walmart.
No.
But, you know, they're not here.
No.
Sometimes, even though you don't like Kmart and Walmart, though, you go.
No,
well,
some territories in blue states have managed to keep Walmart out of their town.
I'd rather, in red states I wish
as well.
They had a Super Walmart because I'd rather deal with their prices than Ralph's.
Yeah.
I'm just being honest.
Yeah, Ralph's a loaf of bread with card, $1.29. Without card, $72.50.
But yeah, right.
You,
yeah.
You get the gas points now, which is kind of exciting.
You get what? Tell me about
so
this.
When you
at Ralph's.
This is great
with
news.
Ralph. Yeah. So when you use, instead, they used to give you cash back. So you after your every month, they give you like, you want here's $10 to use to your next thing. Now it's 20 cents off your gas.
Where?
What
station?
At Shell's.
Oh, at Shell.
At
okay.
Shell.
Okay.
Yeah, if you
so I fill up at
this
Shell across the street.
Card.
Yeah, punch in your number and then you're 20 cents.
So how often are you in the Valley? What would you be in the Valley for other than today?
Other than today, I go to my acting class. My acting coach is literally right down the street. So
who's
I am
coach?
Here. Bill Howie.
Bill Howie
in the Valley.
Bill Howie in the Valley. I like that.
Bill
he
Howie
should
in the
put
Valley.
That on park
band.
Benches and
right?
and urinal cakes.
Please give it up.
Bill Howie in the Valley.
Bill Howie in the Valley.
Him
yeah,
and his wife
good.
teach the class down there. His son is Steve Howie from Shameless.
Gotcha. Oh. Shameless is a good show.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, what else was I going to ask you? We're going to play that.
We're
going to play the Eric interview in like 5 minutes. But what else was I going to ask you? I know I had other things.
So we should talk about
the pilot.
Yeah, shot the pilot.
Cookies.
Cookies? What?
Oh, we made these cookies.
Okay.
Well, you also, I'm stalking you also, but you also made pasta salad?
Oh, I make the pasta salad.
Okay,
you make
the pasta salad, but you too make cookies together.
Yeah.
Yes. The cookies, do you know about them?
I don't know about them. You don't post them, therefore I don't know about
them. Hey.
That's true. Good point.
We posted
need
it
more
on
pictures.
Facebook.
I think we just had
or
pictures.
Or just Instagram. That's all I need.
Oh,
Instagram.
She needs Instagram. I didn't
I
put it on Instagram.
I don't necessarily need a paragraph or a 10 sentences.
She's smart.
You know,
that's true.
Well, we tried. I fear this might only be a few sentences. I'm trying to make a story out of it. Basically, we rolled Oreos into cookie dough and baked it.
Oh, good Lord.
And it turned out really good.
That's why, because that's just dangerous.
It's bad. Like the Oreos inside were soft.
I only had two. But I'm a diabetic, and
did you go in coma after that one?
I got really, really dizzy.
Yeah.
But you know,
it was his idea.
Yeah.
I got a great idea. Let's make Oreos.
I was in the store. I was in the baking aisle, and I'm like, Lee.
How long were we at Ralph's?
We were there for like an hour. And I'm like, I eat so healthy now that once a week I just got to make something really, really awful for you. And I'm like, all right, so what I'm going to do is we're going to find some shit, just make awful, awful for you shit. And we decide on chocolate chip cookie Oreos.
I've seen that done before. Yeah. I want to say a friend of mine has done that, and
it was delicious.
It's not original, but if we were too wacky with our creativity, it might have tasted bad, and it would have been a waste of money. This was not a waste of money.
No.
It's a lot of things.
He liked them so much, he took cookies to the movies with him.
I did. I took them to the movies when I went to see 3-4 things at the AMC.
No, but I'm shocked you didn't fall asleep.
That much sugar.
If I had two of them cookies, I would have been knocked out. In like an hour.
I just heard about someone telling me about fried Nutella.
Really?
I don't know how you fry Nutella,
see,
though.
See that? I'm against the frying.
Can you fry peanut butter?
Yeah, I think you can essentially fry anything. I've never, you know, dabbled in the frying. Everyone used to have
Nutella.
Frying parties where you bring something to fry.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could breadcrumb Nutella and throw it in the fryer, right?
I guess that's
right?
what you do, but that's... They were...
Like a croquette, almost.
There's something on NPR that they were talking about that. And I was like,
maybe
NPR was talking about fried Nutella.
You know, like those mac and cheese balls or whatever? Maybe they're talking about making like a doughy ball with Nutella in it. Like it's a donut with Nutella in it.
And you know
what?
You put like Chips Ahoy on the cookies, like crushed up something, and then for a batter.
Well, no, I think what it sounds like to me, right, is something like that, or like a donut.
Yeah.
It's a donut filled. It's like a donut hole. Yeah. Remember at Dunkin' they used to have...
It's a Nutella.
We need Dunkin' Donuts.
A Nutella munchkin.
I love
how packed would Dunkin' Donuts be if they had one in anywhere near LA?
There's a lot of competition though. This state
I'm
loves
telling
donuts.
You, though,
I don't know what
there are so
loves.
Many people from out of state that live here. They'd be like Dunkin' Donuts.
I know.
They have the best coffee.
Yeah, good
donut
coffee.
Holes.
They had the munchkin holes. Yeah. And the thing I liked about their donuts, they weren't too good. They weren't so good that you ate like five of them.
Right. They're good enough.
You have one or two. Yeah.
And I think it was the coffee that did it. Like the combination, whatever crack they put in their coffee.
When
you
now
got it with
like,
sugar, they just fucking.
I get
it
every morning when I go back to Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
Next Thursday, I go back for like 3 weeks.
I always have
every
Dunkin'.
Morning. I'm at Dunkin'. Every morning for my coffee, I'm at Dunkin'. Dunkin' raised their coffee prices, though. It's like $2.30 for a large now.
Hey.
I remember when Dunkin' Donuts in high school, this was like 10 years ago, so you were around Dunkin' at that time,
yeah.
Right? You would have been there. Coffee was like 50 cents, 75 cents.
Yep.
Yeah.
Inflation, I understand inflation happens and it's costly, but it really feels like it's inflating a lot, right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think. It's like that's almost the price of like a Starbucks coffee, though.
And
right.
I remember Caesar
and
I.
Far superior
way
than
better.
Caesar
yeah.
and I, one morning, we had to go to Encino at like 8 a.m. And I go, oh, we'll stop at McDonald's because they got dollar large coffee,
right? I'm sorry, McDonald's has amazing coffee.
They have great coffee.
It's because it's Newman's Own.
They have great coffee. But I stopped there for my dollar large coffee that they have in Chicago. Every McDonald's in Chicago, it's a dollar for a cup of coffee. No, $3.
I was just going to say $3.
At McDonald's?
Yeah.
What?
L.A.
Well, yeah, and
only
that, I think
LA.
It's because they change it over. It's the Newman's Own, the iced coffees, all that stuff.
Unbelievable.
Huh.
Pretty damn.
So I'm going to play this Eric LaRae Harvey interview. I keep forgetting he has seven names.
Yeah.
And then
the third.
We're going to come back with Jonathan Holub, and then we're going to come back with Maura Jenly and myself. It's going to be a full show today. So here's Eric LaRae Harvey, Boardwalk Empire. We'll get some food during this, huh?
Hey.
Food?
I'm fine.
Yeah, you're fine?
I made an omelet.
Ooh.
How'd that go?
The omelet maker sucks.
It's bad?
Yeah.
Ooh.
We found an omelet
Wait,
maker.
Why is it
I've
bad?
Got a good omelet maker for you.
Well, we
you do?
It does rolled omelets.
It was a... Wow.
Uh-huh. William Sonoma. Wedding registry.
But just before we found...
I need to get married.
Yeah. we'll tell the omelet story after the interview.
Okay.
Wait, no, the omelet's no good?
The George Foreman grill that we found on the street.
Ew.
On top. It was clean, and it works.
Okay.
The pan you put on top of the grill does not heat up. I couldn't use it. So it's dead to me.
Okay. Well, here's Eric LaRae Harvey, we'll hear more about
Lee's
cooking
later.
This is Matthew Aaron here with Lee Capreas.
Hello.
And we're with Eric LaRae Harvey, who you famously know as Dunn Pernsley on Boardwalk Empire. And Eric, of course, cannot join us live because he's in New York. I believe, are you still filming Boardwalk, or is that done with, sir?
Oh, yes. The season continues.
Okay.
How are you, Matthew and Lee, though? Good to speak to you.
Good to speak to you.
Very good.
Good to speak to you. So you guys are still filming. I know you guys had a big premiere party last night because Bruce Fretz was there wearing a lampshade on his head. And I hear you guys I heard you guys had a good time. And this is like a big year for Boardwalk, but especially for you, I'm understanding. Is that correct?
Is that what the streets are saying, you know?
That's what the dirt sheets are saying.
I think
the rags
it's an incredible season all around, but thank you.
yeah, no. Lee is a huge fan of the show, and I will be perfectly open and honest, as I've talked about this on the show numerous times. I have yet to see Boardwalk Empire. It's out there. It's still out there. Now, Eric, I am not playing, brother.
Let me explain. He has this aversion to shows. He has this aversion to TV shows that are not set in the present day, which sounds... Do you know what I mean? But like some people are just like, I can't.
Costume dramas, Lee.
Costume dramas. Come on. It's not the Tudors.
It's not the Tudors. And all you hear about Boardwalk is it's the greatest show ever. And by the way, Eric, I've enjoyed your work, man. I saw you on Law & Order years ago, brother. Years ago on an episode with Corbin Burnson, right?
With who?
With Corbin Burnson. Is that the first time I saw you on Law & Order, right? And Caveman Valentine.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Is that right? That's back in the day, though.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've known.
Yeah, it was back today.
Yeah. So I know Eric's work, and I love Eric, and I love people on that show. Lee and I famously have talked about how we were at the Four Seasons when Bobby Cannavale was there, and Steve Buscemi
and Gretchen Mol,
and Gretchen Mol,
lots of people.
And Lee's like, and I didn't even know why they were all together. I go, why is Bobby Cannavale and Gretchen Mol and Steve Buscemi all together? And Lee's like, oh, they're all on Boardwalk Empire.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, oh, okay. That makes sense. Never seen it. Bruce Fretz, you there?
I'm here.
See, I loaded up the experts. I load up the experts, Eric, because someone needs to ask you smart questions. So
Bruce.
How are you, Bruce?
I'm good. I'm a little tired. I was at the Bulldog Empire party last night. I didn't get a chance to say hi to Eric there, but I saw him, and he was looking sharp.
Dunn, how hard how hard does Bruce party?
I didn't do any fruity drinks last night. I stuck with straight vodka. So.
Oh, whoa.
It's clean liquor, Bruce. It's clean liquor.
So Eric, explain.
But they had chill girls hanging upside down from chandeliers pouring champagne into people's glasses.
Oh.
I mean, that's a good party.
Oh, yeah.
That was a good party.
That's why you guys are running late. I understand.
I get it.
I understand showgirls hanging from ceilings. Okay, so Eric, explain to me how you got involved with Boardwalk, first of all. Explain to me how you got involved with this show, which is supposedly fantastic, I hear.
It's terrific. You're messing up, Matt.
Well, what do you do, Matthew? I mean, of course, there's the audition process and
other
than that, you know, nothing fancy, nothing special.
No, I would love to.
But you didn't know you were going to be on as much as you were, right? You started out, you thought it was going to be like a short-term gig, right?
Yeah, it did start out that way. Originally, I thought it was just going to be a one-episode event, but it turned to I guess going on 3 years now. So, you know, I couldn't be more happy than that. So, but it's been a wonderful experience so far, and I'm really happy about it.
Well, you're getting a lot of exposure. I mean, your bare ass was on the big screen of the Zig Zag last night. How did that feel?
Man, you're making me blush. I wasn't used to so much, I've never seen actually that kind of nudity from me, but it was a little shocking for even me to see, but hey, you know, whatever it takes to get the job done, make the story move along, man. I'm up for it.
No, there's a great scene in the first episode of the season that's airing on Sunday with you, sex and violence. I mean, it's the perfect combination.
Okay.
That's what makes the world go round, hey.
Right?
So Eric, you brought up the audition process, though, Eric, for the show. Who did you audition for? How does the audition process for Boardwalk Empire work? Because this seems like a very high-level show, and usually the audition processes are a little different for these kind of shows.
It was a lot of, of course, the initial audition and then several callbacks and, you know, meeting with the head writers and the head producers, of course, and then finally getting approval, you know. And then, lo and behold, you know, you're cast. And from there, you know, it's pretty much like welcome to the family and, you know, see what you can do. So,
do they make you like screen test with the Michael K. Williams or anyone like that that you share a good amount of screen time with on the show?
No, not for this process. There was no screen test or anything. There was just that just the initial interviews and auditions with Terrence Winter and getting approval from Martin Scorsese and. And, you know, I met Michael at the reading, and that was the first time we had ever met. And then we had some discussions about, you know, the roles and how we perceived them. And then it got to the shoot day, and we took it from there. And everyone was just so accommodating and, you know, just, you know, that's the great thing about Boardwalk Empire. It's like, it's really a community of, like, collaborators. Everyone wants to do the best job possible, you know, to make the show work. So... Mm-hmm. Got down to working.
So
did you actually meet Martin Scorsese, or was that just like an approval process that happened out in another room somewhere?
I did actually get to meet him, but it wasn't that day, and it wasn't actually that episode, or either that year. For the first time this season, actually, the beginning of the season. Yeah,
how
was
he?
I was in awe, of course. What can you say? You know, you meet certain people, and like, you know, you always dream of meeting them, and then, like, you know, when you finally see them and they're, like, right in your face, like, you can't speak.
Yeah. Just so choked up, you know. Like, ah, 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 you know? But yeah, he's just a master, and you just want to give him like his breathing space.
Yeah. When you met Martin Scorsese, how many espressos for the day was he into already?
Is that his thing? I had no idea.
I don't know. He's a fast talker, man. He's a. I can't follow him.
No. It was doing a reading actually, the script, and he was actually just listening very intently, you know, about the storyline and, you know, I guess the story. So it was all about business and work.
He's as involved in the show as he can be, though, right? So
right.
I was going to ask about him and also another EP on the show, I believe, is Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
How involved is a guy like Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah, it sounds like they still are hands-on with it. They don't just have their name on
it. Yeah,
I'm
curious.
Wow, you guys broke up to that whole thing.
Oh,
I'm not sorry.
Yeah, I couldn't hear that.
I'm hearing what sounds like a Xerox machine.
I think Bruce is faxing. No. What I was asking, Eric, is how involved is a guy then like Mark Wahlberg? So Scorsese, you're saying, is still very involved in the show. Is Wahlberg that involved in the show as well? I'm wondering what these guys add from behind the scenes. As we know, Terrence is very involved. And Terrence Winters, and we know Martin's involved. So what about Wahlberg? Is he still involved, or is that more of just like an overseeing thing?
You know, that is a totally different side. You really asking the wrong guy. I mean, that's the producer world, and, you know, I'm not a producer. I'm just an actor. So the producers are, you know, they have their own sort of language and community, and, you know, as well as actors and directors and, you know, crew. So as far as, like, Mark and Martin and, you know, and Mr. Kelly and, you know, and Howard and Tim and the rest of the producers on the show and Pepper, you know, I really don't exactly know their day-to-day operations, but I can say that they're all very supportive of the show, and they all continue to believe in the show. And But as far as, like, how they really operate, I really couldn't give you, you know, any concrete.
What about the directors? I'm fascinated by Tim Van Patten. I think he's such a great director, and I love the fact that he started out as an actor on The White Shadow, and I saw him at the premiere last night. He was sitting right behind Tyson Chandler and the Knicks. I was like, oh, man, it's like a whole basketball all-star team here. But he's turned into such an amazing director. I mean, what is he like to work with on set?
An amazing director, an amazing person, just so supportive, you know. You know, it's all about getting the right shot and what do we get it done, and, you know, and just wow. I mean, what can I say about him? You know, other than, like, he's the best, you know. Everyone's the best there. If, like, I didn't have, I don't have any regrets about, you know, working on that show or, you know, any of the people that work for the show. It's just, it's really a great family of, you know, artists, from the directors to the actors to the crew, that, you know, try and collaborate to, like, present the best possible, you know, shows or episodes, you know, that we can get from each other. So we all push each other, and no one takes anything personally, and, you know, we'll do it till we get it right, and I think it comes out wonderfully, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's,
do you feel like the show has pushed you to the next level of kind of recognition? I mean, since you've been on for 3 years, and, you know, are more people coming up to you and knowing who you are now?
Yeah, you know, and after last night, they're, like, talking about my ass all of a sudden, you know? Things have gotten a little more intimate than I really cared for, but hey, you know. But yeah.
So you'd say, you know, when you're getting ready to film your first scene and you don't really feel as nervous, you're like, oh, this is a big formal TV show for HBO. By the time you start rolling, your first scene where he meets you in the jail cell with Chalky, which is such a great way to introduce your character, I think, because he doesn't know who he is. I love that introduction. At that point, once the cameras start rolling, you just feel relaxed and comfortable, I imagine.
Well, I just remember my first film set. You know, I was actually, you know, a bit nervous because, you know, dealing with such professionals, you know, on Boardwalk Empire. It's like, I actually did honestly feel like a guest, you know. So I just like just didn't want to like you know embarrass myself, and but by the end of the episode, you know, just as we work, you know, things just got a lot more relaxed and comfortable. And by the end of the episode, you know, it felt like you know I you know known them for a very long time, you know. So I mean that's the community that you know that. That World War breach, you know, to very open, loving, and you know, hey, we're here for you, you know. No matter if it's your first day or you've been here for years, you know, everyone's still going to try and do their best to you know make the situation very comfortable and inviting to work at.
So you're so good at playing a badass. I know in real life you're like an educated, cultured guy. So is this just acting, or are you really a badass in real life?
Well, what you say? I'm a very cultured and educated guy. Yeah, you know, it's so fun playing dumb because you know you get to do things, or you know, I've been allowed to do things that I can never possibly do, like in this day and age, you know. Yeah, whether it's costumes or you know the makeup and the hair, and it's just so much fun. So, you know, people see him as a badass, but, you know, I just, you know, he's a man that, you know, that, just trying to survive.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What, let me ask you this as the guy who knows nothing, so you can help me out here. What is Jeffrey Wright doing on the show this year?
He's killing it. That's
wow.
Fun. I saw his first episode, man. He is amazing.
Okay, so what's his character bring to the show? Like, sell me on this year. Like, why should I need to tune in right now?
Is this Matthew speaking right now?
Yeah.
This is Matthew. I need to know why I need to watch. I see Jeffrey Wright's going to be on. I love Jeffrey Wright. What is his role on this show? And what's going on?
Yeah, you need to watch Matthew. You because I told you so. I told you to watch. You know, that's why you need to watch.
All right. You don't watch.
But no, his character's name is Dr. Valentin Narcisse. That's all you need to know. Like, who wouldn't want to see John Ritter? Dr. Valentin Narcisse.
Pretty good.
Dr. Divinity. That's who he is. And the interesting thing about the show, I don't know whether you know, is like, you know, you don't really get to, you get to read only your parts and your scenes. You don't get to read any other characters or storylines or anything, or the whole script for that matter. So, you know, I'm really only aware of, like, what Dunn does as far as, like, what Nucky or, you know, what Dr. Valentin does or Chalky. You know, I'm not privy to that information. So I'll be watching every Sunday, you know, just as a regular viewer just to see, like, you know, what's going to be happening in that episode. So, but I tell you what, he is the scenes that I have had with Jeffrey have been, you know, amazing. We went to school together, so it was almost like, you know, rekindling, you know, that old bad school training that, you know, we both were brought up in. And I think he's the ultimate, you know, professional. And I was really good to see him after so many years again. And I think he's doing an amazing job on the show.
He's amazing.
Here's why you should watch him, Matt, for Jeffrey Wright, okay? So he plays his character. He's like a sort of Bible-spouting gangster. He makes Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction look like a wimp.
This guy
is badass, man.
All right.
Jeffrey Wright is serious.
So they only give you your...
Yeah. So
this is the thing that a lot of these shows do, where they only give you your scenes. They don't give you a whole script for the episode.
Do they give you reason for that?
Is it primarily just because, you know, need-to-know basis, got to keep the story under wraps and all that?
I think that's pretty much it, definitely, yes. You know, there's a confidentiality agreement, you know, that we all pretty much adhere to. But, yeah, I think it's just to keep the story in the wraps for the most part. And it keeps, you know, as an actor, it's really great because it keeps me on my toes, you know. It's like, well, I don't know what anybody else is really going through, so I really can only focus on what my character is going through. And I think it actually heightens the show in a sense.
Yeah. Do you feel like as an actor that helps you, or is it just a different way for you to have to do acting to not know what's going on in the other 40 pages or whatever that you're not involved in?
I definitely believe it. It's helped me. I've never actually had to, like, do this before. I've never worked this kind of way before. You know, in other jobs that I've had the full script before, you know, and I was able to operate from that point of view. But this is the first experience where, you know, I was, where, you know, other information, other character information was hidden. And but I think that heightened my senses as an actor because I could only focus on me and my character. So
there's
a wonderful way to work.
Well, Eric, there's a lot of New Yorkers and a lot of theater people on this show, and I know you're a theater guy, and I know you're a New Yorker. What do you think bringing all those type of guys together does? Is there just a different community in New York and in the theater world? And what do you think that adds anything to this show?
Yes, definitely. Yes. That's all I can say is, yeah. I mean, New York has its own energy in itself, of course, and, you know, the actors are pretty much based in New York. I guess we do a lot of international casting, too, you know. I can't really speak about that too much, but we have a lot of actors from London and Ireland, and it's like an international show, really. And you know, the actors they do get from New York, you know, I think they do have a theater background and or a lot of film experience background, so they're using everyone to the best of their you know, abilities. And
so I came in late. Did you guys already talk about Rounders?
No, we didn't talk about
Rounders.
There's not been any Rounders.
You have a
talk.
Great scene with Ted Norton in Rounders. I mean, that was pretty early in your career. Were you intimidated going into that, or were you, did you feel like you were up for it?
Oh, no. I was definitely not intimidated. That was another fun part, too. You know, people say, you know, I play a lot of, like, badasses, but, you know, they're all fun characters to me because how often do you actually, you know, get to play a guy who, you know, just has no fear about what he's speaking upon? And Rounders, you know, with Ed Norton, you know, he made it seem so spontaneous, you know, like, even though it was, like, scripted. You know,
yeah.
The way he delivered the line seemed like he had just might have stopped his head. So
yeah,
you know, it's very like it's very cool to work with Ed Norton.
I was gonna say Ed Norton has a reputation that goes both ways, but I bet you he was really nice to Eric. I wouldn't want to fuck with Eric. So of course Eric's like, no, he was so nice. I don't know what people are talking about. Oh, no, yeah. Who would screw with him? It's like when we had Tiny Lister on this show.
Right.
Of course everyone loves Tiny.
Yeah.
Who's going to fuck with Tiny?
Yeah, right.
So.
Anybody.
Except maybe Malkovich.
Yeah, right. So, Bruce, this is for you, too. Tell us about the premiere party last night. Caesar tells me you're taking pictures with Buscemi. And that he looks like
yes.
He just ate some anchovies. So what happened?
It was great. It was they had the screen. It was Excel on the huge screen, and then the party was at Cipriani 42nd Street, and they had the showgirls hanging upside down, and lots of booze and food, and Vince Giordano's Nighthawks playing live, and it was a great crowd. I mean, the whole cast was there. Lots of Sopranos alums were there. I got manhandled by Polly Walnuts.
Hey,
I actually stepped in front of Tony Turco, and he like physically moved me out of the way. So that was a brush of fame, and had my awkward moment with Steve Buscemi where I went up with him and complimented him on his directing work because I think he's a really great director. You know, Trees Lounge, and he directed the Pine Barrens episode of Sopranos. And
right.
I asked him, you know, if he was going to direct Boardwalk Empire, and he was like, "No, they haven't asked me." Oops. But, you know, we took a nice picture and talked to Jack Houston, who I just wrote a piece about for the new issue of TV Guide, who's an incredibly nice guy, and just like some other random people, Questlove was there for The Roots, and Dallas Roberts, who I also just wrote a piece about, was there, and so it was a fun time.
Yeah, Dallas is a great actor.
It was.
You know, it's funny. It feels like I'm missing out on better events in New York than L.A. Every time we talk to Bruce or have on guys like Eric from New York,
yeah,
it seems like they're having the best premieres. L.A. doesn't have great premiere parties.
No. Who are you going to get manhandled by at an L.A. premiere?
Zero people.
Not Tony Sirico.
Zero people.
No.
No one manhandles you in L.A.
No.
They talk shit about you behind the camera.
Right.
But it sounds like...
Hey, we're coming up.
What?
We have a premiere there on Friday.
On Friday you have a premiere in L.A.? I was not invited.
Oh.
What a shock. Is it at the Body Shop?
Well, you know what? They have to start contacting, you know, for people that watch the show. Maybe they can understand it.
Well, so they just don't like me, because Lee watches the show. They just don't like you. You didn't get invited.
I didn't get invited.
So, Eric, what...
I was going to be one of those women pouring champagne. I was going to dress. I need the money.
What else do you got going on, Eric? Because I'm assuming after Boardwalk, this is opening the door to do a lot more, you know, maybe bigger theater roles or even bigger film roles. What are you doing right now, other work-wise?
I'm really one of those, serve one master at one time, you know, kind of guys.
Yeah.
And so I can really focus on, you know, my current job, and I really don't like to split my interest on, you know, too many different projects at the same time. So right now, you know, I'm definitely focused on finishing the season. And after that, you know, then we can, once that business is done, then I can concentrate on other things after that. But
yeah.
So right now my focus is definitely like finishing Boardwalk this season. But, you know, in the future, I mean, who knows what it can hold or what it holds. So, I'm definitely available and open to all opportunities. And, you know, of course, you know, work begets work, hopefully. And I'm looking forward to, continue working.
Let me ask you a question, too, and I'm curious about this because I talked to Tiny Lister about it as well, and there seems to be a limited number of roles for, you know, big, worked-out black guys, okay? Is there still, to you, a major issue with there not being enough black cinema, or is there... Do you just want to see it mixed more? What's your feelings on all that?
Well, wow, man, that's deeper than I really want to go. I really don't know what to say about that. I think there's a lot of black cinema over the years, and it's evolved, and it continues to progress, and. You know, stories, you know, the stories definitely are out there, and we just need more of them. That's all I can say.
Yeah. No, I agree. Well, Bruce, I know you got to get going. Do you got anything you need to talk about? Of course, TV Guide, of course, if no one... No one has...
TV Guide, I got another piece going up on RogerEbert.com this week.
What's coming up on Roger? What do you got coming up there?
Huh?
What do you got coming up on Ebert?
I'm doing a piece on Lynn Shelton, director of Hump Day,
right.
And Your Sister's Sister in this movie Touchy Feely. She's really great.
Oh, great.
And got my Michael J. Fox Emmy Magazine cover story coming out soon, so
okay.
Keeping busy.
Okay, that's great. Hey, you know, what I was going to ask you is why didn't you do a piece on De Palma, and did you see Passion?
I pitched it, but they had a whole De Palma package put together already, so I missed out on that. But,
he pitched Passion. He was going
to
direct.
I'm hoping to do a piece on the Carrie remake coming up, and I'll deal with De Palma on that.
Did you see Passion, though, Bruce?
Yeah, I didn't think it was any good.
All right, see you later, Bruce.
Okay.
Get the hell off my show. Get off my lawn.
See you later.
Get off my lawn.
Good talking to you, Eric.
And just remember, a McGriddle is great to cure a hangover.
Sorry, I missed you yesterday.
I'll look for you at next year's premiere party. We'll have a drink.
We'll have vodka.
Yes.
Yes.
All right.
You both will have vodka.
See you guys.
Eric, last thing I'm going to ask you before I let you get going as well is there anything you can reveal about, it would not reveal, reveal is a bad word, but what direction is your character specifically heading in this year that we can know about?
Um,
I can only say safely that well, John is definitely a, you know, a man of he's an opportunist, you know, and this year he's definitely trying to improve and improve his world.
Okay.
And,
okay.
Take advantage of every opportunity that's being presented.
So he's an opportunist this year, Dunn. He's an opportunist. Lee, do you have anything else for Eric?
No, just can't wait to watch it.
Eric, thank you so much for joining us. Thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, I'm honored. Thank you.
All right, hopefully I'll bump into you at the Four Seasons this weekend. That seems to be the boardwalk hangout.
Man, please, you know, I'm going to be in L.A. I'm coming tomorrow, so you know, for the premiere on Friday. So, you know, please bump me and say hi and all that.
I'd love to. Mm-hmm. I'll talk to you then. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you, Eric.
Bye, Lee.
Thank you.
Oh, he was lovely. What a nice man.
What a nice man.
I feel warm and fuzzy now.
So are you one step closer to possibly considering watching Boardwalk now as a result of that interview?
No.
No?
You haven't watched.
I'm just kidding. Of course I'm going to watch it one day. No, I haven't watched it.
Really?
No.
Okay.
One day. What?
Then a great calling.
That's right.
Which shall rise from this volcanic ash and bring mirth to the citizens of... What is this music?
Robin Hood, Prince of
Thieves.
Oh,
there
yeah. you go. Okay.
There you go. You ruined it, though. But what we're really getting ready for is Football Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Are you ready for some football? All three of us Bears fans, I take it?
Yep.
There's no Canadian teams for you to root for. Are you a CFL fan?
I am a CFL fan.
Well, you got to especially be a Bears fan now because they got the coach, Trestman. He's
yeah.
a Canadian
yeah,
rules football
he's
guy.
He's a CFL guy.
Yeah.
Getting ready.
Matthew Aaron Show gets ready for football.
I think for our listeners, I'm going to let you know, I'm headed to either Tinhorn Flats or Taste Chicago. Here's the thing about Taste, where we're at right now.
There's now two
North
Tinhorn
Hollywood
Flats. Which
way.
One?
No, fuck the one in Hollywood.
Okay.
No, that's
I figured.
603 North Hollywood Way, Taste Chicago, by the way. We're here right now where you get the mini deep dish pizzas. This place fills up. And it fills up quick. And this game's at 10 a.m. And it's Bears, it's Bengals. And my pick to click is Elfshon Jeffries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I think he's going to have a breakout year. And who else is going to have a good year? Well, here's the thing. So 10 a.m. So that means I got to be up at 9. I got to pick out my favorite Bears jersey or Bears t-shirt by 9:30.
Okay.
I got to be out of the house by 9:35, 9:40.
Because
I got to get here soon enough to get a seat.
To get a seat?
At Taste.
Yep.
If there's no seat to Taste, I'll be at what's the other place? Tinhorn.
Tinhorn.
Which is like 5 minutes down the road.
Okay.
It's the first game. It's Bengals. I'd go to Santa Monica and come by see Jen or something if it was serious. If it was like a real, if it was a real team.
Right.
Yeah, when it comes... Listen, let's promise ourselves when
he's
it becomes
going to be showing up at your house to watch the Bears.
Right.
I think.
No, let's make
cable.
A promise here. When it gets to be real games time, yeah. I will bring some food. You will make some food. We'll have like a whole thing.
We'll do it.
We'll have a whole thing. It'll be around Thanksgiving, Christmas time. It'll
does your
be
husband
great.
Make up a big? Does he get the grill going and stuff
he
for
does,
football?
Yeah,
that's great. We're going to get along just great.
Grill,
your husband
we've
and
got
I.
Everything. We
we'll
have
be besties.
With the butcher at the farmer's market.
Oh, I love how she says it too. They got the connection.
We've got
with
the
butcher. He gets you the good meat.
Oh
boy,
yeah.
I gotta meet this person. I worked as a butcher in Chicago,
did
so
really?
I'm always
yeah.
on the lookout for a good
yeah.
meat
yeah,
hookup.
Well, yeah.
I worked by Greek
Farmers Market,
the
one in
the Grove. Farmers Market.
Really?
Yeah.
What do you think of the meat quality there at the Grove?
It's actually really good. It's
yeah.
just it's fresh.
Because you uh-huh. know, like a lot of things at the Grove suck.
Yes.
A lot of things.
It's crowded. It's overcrowded.
Well, no. I mean, food wise.
Oh,
a
no,
lot of the food there
not,
blows. So
really
I've been
hard.
Worried about the farmer's market because it's like everything else here sucks. Like, have you had a pizza at the farmer's market or have you had a...
We ate at the Cajun place. It wasn't good.
No.
I used to eat there all the time, though, after college. My friend and I, we would go every
that is the
day.
After college place.
That was just the place
yeah.
where we were like, oh, let's go. We're going to hang out there. them what we're going to do with our lives.
Right.
Send out submissions.
So farmers market's okay.
Farmers think it's okay. You've got, you know, there's some hit or miss places inside, but
well,
you know, we get our, you know, Thanksgiving turkey there. We get all of our barbecue grilling stuff.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
You do turkey on Thanksgiving?
We do the turkey.
What do? You do the whole turkey?
We do the whole
turkey. And you do cranberry?
Cranberries and the stuffing and green beans and mac and cheese.
Man.
Okay. Oh boy.
Yeah. KFC this year for Thanksgiving,
right?
Lee?
Yeah,
or,
right.
Popeyes? What do you want
to
do?
We're going to have to. Oh, come on. We're classing it up.
Yeah, Boston Market.
Boston Market.
Are you going to be here or are you guys going home?
No, I don't think I'm going home.
I think we're
going
to be here.
He's going home for Christmas.
For Christmas, yeah.
I may be going to Vegas again for Christmas.
I go home and I work at the butcher shop. I help them out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they still let me in there. It's a, you know, family business.
That's
in 69.
Awesome.
If you're in the Chicago area, Olympia Meats at 810 West Randolph.
Olympia Meats.
Uh-huh.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That sounds good.
Olympia Meats. That's where Ronnie goes to get his wings.
Where Ronnie at Cigars and Stripes goes
Cigars
to get his wings.
Cigars and Stripes. When's the last time you were in Chicago? You haven't been in the last year, have
no,
you?
No, not in the last year. We're actually going end of October for our 1 year.
End of October?
Yeah.
Well, that'll be real nice.
That's
how you wrap up the 1 year honeymoon.
That's how we wrap up the 1 year.
That's good.
Chicago.
What are you going to do when you're there?
I think we're going to go see a couple shows in Second City. Just, you know,
that's
hit up
right.
all our favorite restaurants.
That's right. What restaurant
are
your favorite?
What are your favorites?
I'm very, like, generic. I love...
It's okay. It's okay.
Gino's East.
No, I actually don't.
You were about to say you don't like Gino's East.
I'm not a huge fan of Gino's East.
No?
It's too saucy.
Too saucy.
Too saucy. See, I like Giordano's.
See,
I like
Gino's
Mamadi.
East because it's an actual pie.
I like
the saucy aspect because it's a pie.
It's a pie.
I used to go all the time when I first moved out there.
And I like Giordano's.
But I prefer Giordano's.
You don't think Giordano's is saucier than Gino's?
No, I think Gino's is like they ladle it in.
I don't know about that
And
I think it's also, Gino's East, it's a little too sweet, the sauce.
I like a little sweet
I like
sauce.
A little sweetness. I'm kind of partial to.
Yeah.
I'm kind of partial. I'm kind of partial to Pequod's because the sauce there is really strong.
Yeah.
I love that sauce. I think
Pequod's
that's
is really good.
Fantastic.
Really
dish
good
with the burnt cheese on the outside.
Yeah. I forget what I had the other day. I had pizza somewhere and the sauce was sweet and it's the only place in LA I've had it and it's like and I was like this is actually pretty good just because the sauce is sweet.
Yeah.
And I forget where I went and it was so good and it was the other day. I'm so tired today.
So you like the Gino's and the Lou's?
Gino's and Lou's.
No, she doesn't like Gino's.
No,
she likes Giordano's.
I like Giordano's.
And Lou's.
Yes,
Giordano's and Lou's. And then we hit up Gejas all the time, the fondue place.
Oh.
Do you like it? Like what about do you like?
You know what? I think it's one of those things that I used to go all the time as a kid, and it's just like it's a nostalgic place for me. And I don't know, it's kind of fun to like have melted cheese and bread.
Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. Yeah. Right? What more can you ask for?
Uh-huh.
Cheese, bread, and meat.
You know, I've never really done fondue.
Ooh.
That's a secret.
Gejas. Yeah. Don't do the melting pot.
Where's that at?
It's on. Oh gosh, I think it's on Armitage. Just. North
Gejas.
Of Old Town, essentially.
All right, I'll try it. Gejas.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a great
it
place.
Sounds like Gejas.
It does.
Okay. All right.
It does. And
that's
I
how
always,
I'll remember.
I always keep telling people, this is my favorite restaurant. What is it? It's fondue.
Yeah. Where did I have pizza the other day? This is going to bother me. Oh! NYNC Pizza Company.
Oh, yeah.
Really
good.
No, this is good. Really good. Okay. I did not have their deep dish. I had the New York style. But really good.
But it's pizza by the slice, right?
You can get New York style by the slice.
Right.
If you want deep dish, Chicago style, you have to order a whole pie.
Have you tried Fresh Brothers yet?
No, I keep hearing great things about Fresh Brothers.
He's kind of partial to Pizza Rev. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, what's Pizza Rev?
Oh, it's a place where you build your own
thing. You wouldn't know.
Put your own toppings on it and all that. What kind of crust and all that. And it's actually pretty decent, although I'm kind of averse to these restaurants where you make it yourself and nobody has to therefore cook anything or know how to cook.
Yeah.
Then you can pay people minimum wage. But it's good. It's good. It's all fresh stuff and all that. You just tell it, you know. And they make you a little, like, 4 or 5 inch thing there for $8.50 or whatever it is, $9.
Okay.
And it's good.
And, you know, you should probably take some pie home here from here.
I know. I was thinking that.
Because this is where it's at.
Yeah.
Taste Chicago.
Yeah.
I went to NYNC.
Okay.
That was good. But there's not a lot. And by the way, NYNC is in Santa Monica.
Right.
So if you're in the Valley, you want pizza from Taste Chicago.
Which is a no zone.
And right. If you're in the West Side, you want probably NYC. Or have you done Hollywood Pies yet?
No, I've heard about it, but I haven't done it. A friend of mine, they did a pizza crawl instead of a pub crawl. It was a pizza crawl.
Yeah.
Started on like Santa Monica Boulevard. Did Santa Monica at Wilshire area all the way to Venice. There's like surprisingly
a lot of pizza. There's a lot of pizza.
A pizza crawl?
There's a lot of pizza.
So they went
to every single
pizza restaurant. Like,
God.
There's a ton of pizza in
Pit
L.A.
Fire
it's
pizza
just most
in
of
Venice.
It's not good. Would be, yeah, the Pit Fire, yeah.
Love
Pit Fire is good. Pit Fire is good.
Is it the same as the one in NoHo
yeah.
I passed?
Yeah, yeah.
I, for some reason, though, have heard the one in Venice is better. Okay.
Really?
Come visit.
Well.
Really? All right.
Yeah.
See, in the Valley, I went to Masta in Echo Park.
Yeah.
It's not as good as Taste Chicago. Mm. It's not. And people have said it is. It's not. It just really isn't.
No, it really isn't.
I mean, I can't even really explain it other than, first of all, the pizza takes like, you know, it takes its usual, like, instead of 40 minutes, though, mine took an hour, one.
That's nothing.
Two, the sauce was kind of like... Because it's all about the sauce and the cheese.
Yeah.
If you don't nail the sauce and the cheese, I don't care what you put in it. It's not going to be any good.
Sometimes we'll go sauceless.
And the sauce was flavorless.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when you're doing deep dish, you can't go sauceless.
You can go sauceless.
You go sauceless on deep dish.
Or light.
The hour
you
wait.
Go light sauce, but
I've done olive oil.
Like, I do olive oil on my pizza instead of sauce.
Or sometimes some places you can get pesto instead of sauce, which is good.
That sounds good.
I can do that.
Great Lake, though, in Chicago, that's why the hour wait is nothing, because it can take up to 2 hours there. Not counting the 2 hours... 1.5 to 2 hours you might spend getting a table,
right?
Which is almost a four-hour time. And the reason is because some places have rated it as the best pizza that they've ever had, like in the world. It's in Andersonville in Chicago.
Okay.
It's called Great Lake.
By the way, I don't agree about it being that great.
Well, that's a hyperbolic praise.
But I went there before. It was supposedly the greatest place ever. And I will say this. It was pretty new at the time I went, so maybe it's like, maybe they had some kinks to work out or something. But I saw it was good.
Oh, I loved it.
I didn't go crazy over it.
Uh-huh.
I didn't think it was crazy good. I thought it was good.
I loved it. I brought a book.
Yeah.
We're okay.
Yeah. No, I didn't care about the wait there. That didn't bother me. By the way, I didn't really have a wait when I went there.
Yeah.
I went way open.
I guess if you know there's a wait, you prepare yourself.
Well, the owners only have a finite amount of ingredients, so you can only get what the guy got on his bike from a farmer's market that day on your pizza. Yeah, so, and they run out of stuff. And they make like one or two pizzas at a time, so they can only serve people so fast. And they don't want to franchise or adopt an assembly line mentality. So you're kind of just have to be at their beck and call. But, oh, it's so good.
Hey, by the way, I meant to ask you. I was thinking about this, too. I got so much I could always talk to you about, Jim. Being a princess of comedy, right? Okay? All right?
Yeah.
That's what we'll call you.
Okay, perfect. I like that.
What is funny on TV today?
What is funny?
Yeah,
on
what
TV?
Do you watch? That makes you laugh, that you're like, this is funny.
I love Modern Family.
Okay, you do like Modern Family?
I do like Modern Family.
Okay.
Surprisingly, which I don't know if you guys ever saw Neighbors.
Neighbors.
No.
That got canceled?
They got canceled. They brought it back.
Oh, okay.
It's the one that takes, it's about aliens at a suburban.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, the writing on that is really
good.
You
think it's good?
I think it's funny.
Okay.
It's to the point where I don't...
Because I'm trying to decide what to maybe give a chance to this year, you know? Watch a little. I want to see that Goldberg show.
I want to see Goldberg
With Jeff Garland.
With Jeff Garland, who was just on recently.
I want to see...
I like Parks and Rec. Hey.
Yeah, Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec I never got into. Yeah, I watched like an episode and I'm like, this is funny. But like not ever funny enough where I'm like, I gotta watch this all the time religiously.
Right.
I want to see the crazy ones with Robin Williams.
I'm interested to see how that's gonna go.
Me too. And then who else?
Comedies are hard.
Oh, Back in the Game with James Caan.
Yes.
Yes, Rob Cullen does that one. I want to see that really bad.
Okay. But I still watch like Big Bang Theory and, you know.
Yeah, big.
Sometimes the simplest things.
BBT, you like that?
Yeah, sometimes the simplest things just they're mindless, and then I can just laugh.
Well, yeah.
That's all.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't mean to sound like it's like a mindless show, but...
Uh-huh. No, it kind of...
There's something
about
it that...
It's supposed to be there for 22 minutes, and you're not supposed to think about it afterwards.
Right.
You're not supposed to... You're supposed to enjoy 22 minutes.
Yeah.
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 And I still watch reruns of King of Queens and
I
stuff.
I love King of Queens.
Love King of Queens.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. That is a show I think about hours after watching, because
well,
it's so funny.
Well, I just think...
It's so funny.
Yeah.
Do you feel like those shows in the late 90s, is it because we grew up with them, or are they legitimately funnier than the shows now?
I think they're legitimately funnier.
I think
too.
It's both.
It could be.
But even times when I didn't grow up, like Cheers I think's funnier. I think All in the Family's funnier than shows
like,
now.
Well, yeah,
I was
yeah.
Frasier, and I was like, oh my God, I love Frasier.
Yeah,
like,
I know. Everyone was like,
those
Frasier.
Shows were funnier. All the Norman Lear stuff was funnier.
It is funnier,
and
right?
I'm sure Cheers. I didn't watch too many sitcom stuff.
Yeah, you weren't a sitcom guy.
No.
But Seinfeld, all that
Seinfeld.
Stuff's funnier than
it.
Now,
I
right?
Did, yeah, I did watch.
Or am I crazy?
No,
Like, I watched that New Normal last year, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw one episode. It's about this gay couple who has a baby.
Right.
Blah, 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 whatever. Okay. Will and Grace, to me, is just 5,000 times funnier.
Yeah.
I've seen every Will and Grace episode twice. I think it's a great show.
Will and Grace is a good show.
I think it's a great show. I think it's really, really funny.
Okay.
It's really sharp.
Yeah.
And so what's the difference? What's the deal?
It's a combination of, I think that now they're trying to hit things over the head, comedy over the head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like they're the intellectual part of, I don't know, it's like with smarter comedies back then.
Yeah.
And now it's
yeah.
kind of like,
smarter audiences back then.
Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm sick of reading, too, like, because of everything going on with equality and everything that, like, the gay culture, now you can make all these gay programs. Will and Grace was huge. It was one of the biggest shows on TV. They can't even touch those numbers for being such a hot culture and a hot topic.
Did you end up watching the Netflix Arrested Development?
No, not yet.
No, I haven't seen that.
Is
that's
it worth
something
it?
I want to see.
I love Arrested Development.
I do too.
I did get through all of them. It's really smart, but sometimes it's really hard to follow.
Yeah.
But I still because of what it is, I still enjoyed it.
No, I enjoy it too. I'm going to have to figure out what I'm going to do about that Arrested Development. Because I need to watch it.
Yeah.
And I was told by people, here's what I keep hearing from people. Everyone has like a different favorite episode.
Yes.
Like, some people think some episodes were not that funny, and then some people tell me the same episodes were hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's what I seem to get from this whole season, that everyone's torn on what their favorite is. But at least they have favorites, so that means it's good, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
I'll give Arrested Development a go. Did you watch Orange is the New Black
yet? I did.
You did?
I did.
Is it funny?
No. Because
I got to watch it tonight.
Some of it is funny.
It's a lot like Weeds was, though, I'm guessing,
yes.
right? Because it's the same creator.
I enjoy it. I was like, oh, this is really good. This is really good. I did skim through the last three episodes.
Yeah, you just weren't that into it?
Because I wasn't. I lost. There was something about it that I lost interest.
Okay.
But I did enjoy it.
No, I understand. All right, we're going to bring on Jonathan now, right? Is that the deal? Okay, and Jonathan's going to sit there? All right, very, very good. Jen and Lee are going to share a mic.
We're sharing a mic.
Since I'm too cheap to get the 5,000 microphone soundboards. Jonathan is, of course, his documentary that we watched, which is his father and the Man in Black. Very, very, very interesting.
Thank
sir.
You for coming on, Jonathan.
And thank you for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for joining us. Johnny Cash, we were discussing it at the beginning of the show. We're all fans, all three of us. Lee considers himself the biggest of the fans.
Yeah, all right.
He says he discovered Johnny long before mainstream culture.
Before it was
did.
Cool.
Yeah, before it was cool.
1987.
Yeah, right.
He looked a little young to be.
Yeah, right. So I guess all that concert footage from the film and all the screaming fans, that was fake. You made that up, right, Jonathan?
That's right.
No one liked Johnny Cash in the 60s.
No.
Before Rick Rubin, no one liked Johnny
Cash. Yeah, right. Before Rick Rubin. That's good. You fascinate me, though, because I read your bio. You've done everything. Everything, right? In the business.
It feels that way, especially today.
Music producer, you did live events for music, right? I mean, you put Celine Dion on stage, you put, like, all these people on stage that, like, today are, like, the biggest acts in the world. Celine actually has a new single that came out today that I didn't like too much. But it's disappointing. Her stuff has just been disappointing. But that's neither here nor there. But you did
Take
live
that.
Music events. You worked at William Morris. You were an agent?
Yeah, I was, and then I started my own agency. But I was just basically in the right place at the right time. You failed to mention that I'm from Canada.
You are from Canada.
You know, when you're
just like Jen, yeah, Jen Candy.
Fantastic. So as Jen knows, these are our Canadian music stars. And
yeah.
I just was lucky enough to work with them at a time before they were known in the U.S.
I guess, but I mean, man, this is quite the resume. So you worked at William Morris, you started your own company, and now you have this film. Talk to me about the evolution of your life from starting in Canada to through William Morris to doing this film. How did this all happen?
I think the secret is I failed my way all the way to the top. I never planned to be a filmmaker. It never crossed my mind. I failed grade 11 English. I never wrote a short story in my life. I never thought of myself as being artistic in any way, shape, or form. You've seen the movie, so you probably
yeah.
know that after my father committed suicide, I basically couldn't get out of bed. I realized that for the first time in my life that I'd spent my entire adult life trying to earn my father's approval by bettering him professionally. So I figured, you know, if he's not going to love me or respect me, then I'll go out and I'll be bigger than Saul Hollis ever was, which meant going into management and being a talent agent. And after he died, I realized I hated that shit, and I had no one left to prove anything to. So,
what was it about management that you didn't like? Because we've all dealt with agents here. At least Jen and I know have. I know Lee, you've met some agents, right?
Yeah.
So we've all dealt with agents, and we've all dealt with management. And as talent, there's one way we look at it. I'm interested in, from a management perspective, what was it like for you?
Well, I was told never to answer a question with a question, but it begs the question, what do you like about the music business? What do you like about management? It's a tough job. And,
yeah.
you know, growing up with cash and watching my father work with this guy, and, you know, he had it kind of tough. You know, when you look at his contemporaries, Colonel Tom Parker with Elvis.
Yeah, Colonel Thomas Parker, yeah.
Johnny Cash was the original bad boy, and he was all but unmanageable. So, you know, that was management on steroids.
Yeah.
It was all the headaches, you know, squared that people deal with in this business.
What are some of the agent-manager cliches that you would rebuttal with saying, listen, like for instance, just like lawyer jokes, we hear lawyer jokes all the time. Creative people in the business always have comments about their agents and their managers. What are some of the things that you think are like bullshit and like people need to learn that, you know, actually agents and managers are very helpful in this regard or they're misjudged here?
That's a good question. It's kind of reminds me of a philosophy class. Gosh, I would say that from the outside looking in, it looks like a pretty glamorous job, and it can be. But it also attracts a certain A-type personality, shall we say. And it's not something that, you know, a lot of people can do well. There are notable exceptions. But I would say that, you know, it wasn't for me. So I think I found my
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, did you feel like, though, I mean, how was it for you dealing with clients and stuff, though? Were you really, you were invested in it, honestly, at the time. But at what point are you saying to yourself, I don't want to be in this business?
Let me see. There's so many. I worked for Faye Dunaway and Don Johnson.
Wow.
We want names.
He did. He worked with Don Johnson, which I find fascinating, because you worked with Don Johnson during a time where Don had some issues, too.
Yeah, he was going through a divorce, and
yeah.
at the time, I was...
Famously to Melanie Griffith, who everyone knows, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's enough time has passed that I can tell this story, but I was working out of Don's home in Beverly Hills, and they were about to get a divorce, but they were still sharing the home, and Melanie had an assistant. I was working for Don,
yeah.
and they weren't talking to each other, so Don would give me a message to give to Melanie's assistant, would give to Melanie, and it just went around in circles. But I'd have to say that... The wake-up call for me was when I was working with Selma Hayek, and I had
yeah.
to phone her and wake her up in the morning for some callback for some audition. This was when she first moved to Hollywood. apparently setting an alarm.
Like Wild Wild West days around then?
Well,
yeah,
yeah. And, you know, I think alarm clocks were kind of complicated, so...
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, on the
other... She didn't understand he had to hold down the button and press hour like five times. Remember those old alarm clocks where you had
exactly.
to do that?
Exactly, and those were the days. But
yeah.
I guess I'd say that...
you were like, why am I doing wake-up calls for actresses?
On the outside, it looks glamorous, but in reality, being a manager or being an assistant or what have you is...
it's a lot of hard work.
Yeah, and it's not very glamorous.
So we see in the movie why Johnny is kind of an unmanageable talent, right? In maybe in your experience or what you learned from discovering about your father, Saul, and Johnny's relationship, what are some of the things you think that make it so tough to be a manager of someone like that? Like, what is something that made you just go, people don't understand that this is what's going on? Like, for instance, people call you up, obviously, with offers or some kind of, they want to get your client involved in something. And I'm sure this happened with Saul and Johnny, right? And Johnny just wants nothing to do with it, and Saul's trying to convince him it's the best for business, it's the best for you. How do you deal with people like that, that just are really stubborn types?
Well, you let me know if you find the answer. what I will say is that you're absolutely right. I think the manager-artist relationship is every bit like a marriage.
Yeah.
And we all know how many marriages succeed these days.
Yeah.
It's the combination of two people. It's a team. And, you know, Saul was, as Johnny would like to say, as serious as a heart attack. And Cash was in the 60s. He was a wild child. He would just go crazy. And he literally developed a split personality. He famously said that that Johnny was the nice guy. It was Cash who caused all the trouble. So imagine dealing with all these pills, he developed this split personality, and one day Saul would say, so what do you think, Miami on the 21st? And Cash would say, sure, we'll do it. And then the next day, Saul would put the contract in front of him, and Johnny would say, what are you talking about? I never agreed to this. So my father would start this practice of having June witness all of their important conversations in the early 60s. And later, when technology afforded him the opportunity, he began taping his phone calls, and it's those tapes and his audio diaries that drive this movie.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you about, is the audio tapes. Okay.
Yeah.
Obviously, not the most professional thing to do is to record someone else's conversations unknowingly, whatever. When you discovered these tapes, what were your first thoughts on? What was your thoughts on all of this when you're discovering this material, which you do see in the film as well, your
right.
discovery of the material. But, you know, like your personal thoughts on this when you were going through it.
Well, obviously, it was an emotional experience because I had been estranged from my father for 20 years.
Disconnected, totally,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah, estranged for 20 years. He committed suicide. He didn't leave a note. So for me, it was obviously a very cathartic experience to get to know my father as, you know, and reconcile with a dead man. But I want to get back for a minute to what you were saying about taping phone calls, and it's not necessarily the professional thing to do. You got to, especially as a documentarian, look at these people and situations through the lens of the time.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thought I had after I found it was, you know, can I even use it?
Right.
And the answer surprised me. I spoke to it's a sad commentary, really, when a filmmaker says the first person they hired on their team was their lawyer.
Yeah.
But when you're dealing
you
have to. And the answer was, I said, well, what about these tapes? And the lawyer said, they're off the table. And I, you know, tears started to well in my eyes. I thought that meant I couldn't use them. I said, oh, that's terrible because they're just so gripping.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, no, I meant off the table as in a non-issue. And I said, well, how can they be a non-issue? And he said, well, they were recorded before laws were enacted in either country for, you know, requiring someone to alert the other that they were being recorded.
Oh.
So, you know, these were days when artists like Johnny were covering, ripping off songs. Folsom Prison Blues was stolen. From Crescent City Blues, and Johnny was successfully sued over a 10-year period for, you know, using that song.
Wow.
But in Johnny's defense, these things were more common in those days. These days were more tight-assed about all this stuff.
Right. Well, it's interesting. I mean, you discover sort of posthumously about your father who you didn't know so much, and then you discover that he was just sort of obsessed with documentation and categorization and correspondence and just very methodical about all these decisions that he made. Do you think he was onto something in terms of being a manager and trying to do that? Do you think that was like something that maybe helped him, just all this consideration and all this on-the-recordness about these things that he did, managing someone who was so overbearing and impossible?
Or I'm curious if he was going crazy from it.
All of the above, but I think it's a very good point that you make, and it also speaks to the earlier question of what it takes to be a good manager. There's a personality involved where you're great at organizing, you're great at coordination, you can juggle a lot of balls at once, and you keep very, very good records. So his personality lent itself to being a good manager.
Yeah.
But when you ask about taking it to the level of making these recordings and going crazy, you have to, again, look at the times. This was the archetypical 1950s guy. This was when the very idea of seeing a psychiatrist was taboo.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He wouldn't even talk to my mother about anything that was going on in life. His job as a man was to come home and say, everything's going to be fine, dear. And that was it. He used it, these recordings, in my opinion, and I think anybody who sees the film would draw the same conclusion, as a way to practice therapy.
Right.
And so he would dump all of his emotions and his anger and frustration over what he was going through with Cash, but also with his kids and his wife and other things in life on tape. And that's what makes this story quite unique.
It did. And it did kind of go to an extreme where he's like weighing the pros and cons of being alive.
Yeah.
And it's like, my kids. And that's crazy.
That's another hallmark of being a great manager. You're a list maker by nature.
Yeah.
And my father made a pros and cons list for quitting Cash in 1973, which you saw in the movie.
Yeah.
And he made pros and cons list about when to commit suicide and why.
And at the bottom for cons, it was creepy people. I saw two underneath the highlighted one. Creepy people.
Creepy people.
I have to say, with was there a contract that he made you sign as a kid? What I was like. Well, there's that his work bleeding over into his personal life.
Yeah.
You don't know any better.
Yeah, that's true. And I don't know how much your audience knows about the movie, but this is really kind of a family memoir wrapped inside the Johnny Cash story,
right.
The Johnny and Saul story. And it seems to...
No, this is definitely the story of your dad, your father, working with Johnny Cash.
You think so? Okay, because a lot of women will say, no, at the end of the day, this is really a story about Jonathan and not about these guys. But whatever your opinion may be, I think it's fair to say that, and writers, critics, reviewers...
I mean, of course we have your reaction to it all. I mean, that's a part of it.
But the point made over here about my father having me sign contracts, some reviewers have, I think, quite adroitly observed that, geez, it seems as if at the very moment he's losing control over Cash, he's exerting control over his kid by getting his kid to sign contracts. And, I think in many ways my father didn't so much raise me as he managed me. And that's why I talk about this as being a personal story above all else.
Yeah. Let me ask you about could you tell growing up what days were good days for your father? Like if he had a good day with Johnny or anyone that he dealt with, could you tell he had a good day?
No.
So he was always pretty miserable.
Yeah, he was a heavy drinker. He was an alcoholic, but he was one of these alcoholics that never stumbled. He never missed a step, but his personality would change dramatically, and he would get really freaking mean. But having said that, the other thing about my father, and these are things that people who worked with him must have registered as well, he never smiled. There are 464 photos in this movie, and there's not one in it where he's smiling. And so I used to think growing up, and I think any kid would, that this guy doesn't like me.
Right.
We register human emotion based on facial recognition and how someone reacts. It turns out, I'm going through my father's diaries, and he's talking about having had a fist fight with his brother when they were teenagers, and his brother knocked him over a brass bed where... my father lost all four front upper teeth.
Oh,
and this is in the 1940s when, dentistry was like, Auschwitz.
It's a foreign concept.
Absolutely. So my father's on tape saying, so I spent the next 20 years getting work done on my mouth, and it resulted in my being incapable of smiling. And then he adds, which seems to suit my personality anyway.
Oh, wow.
But, you know, a lot of people would just assume that he was an asshole. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
But the fact is that he was a far more complicated and led a richer emotional life than I ever dreamed possible.
Well, I think this movie's very much apparent that he was a complicated person. I think there was a lot of things going on in his head, obviously. Yeah. Lee and Jen and I, we were talking about the music, of course, of Johnny Cash. I think it was interesting because at first you see these gold records that Saul has, like the first scene where you go into the storage room, and it kind of gave you an idea at first. Like, the first thing you're thinking of is, why is this guy so unhappy? Look at this amazing career he had.
Yeah.
And then you watch it unravel. And in your mind, when you're discovering all this, because you are kind of relaying your discovery to us. That's pretty much how this film is, you
right,
know?
Right.
Because you're learning about your dad just as much as we are, because you and your dad had such a disconnect. So were you at any point in time like, why was he so miserable? This is a great, look at all these accomplishments.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know if I phrase that question in my mind in that particular way, but I would add that, you know, this is among the cautionary tales in a movie like this. You know, people tend to walk around thinking that if they become rich and famous, they'll be happy.
No.
And here was a guy who was managing the biggest star in the world. Johnny
yeah.
was outselling the Beatles in 1969, and he had more money than he could spend, and you would think he would be happy. And meanwhile, I discover these, you know, very confessional audio diaries, and the guy is miserable. So it's the lesson here is money and
by the way,
and
both of them seem
happiness.
Miserable. Both of them. Johnny seemed miserable.
Yeah,
absolutely. He was a tortured soul, and so was Saul. And I think you'd agree that, I'll tell you one thing. When I was making this movie, no one wanted to give me the money to make it. They said, oh, you didn't want to tell the manager's story. The guy's probably going to sound like some accountant. You know, weak, boring.
No.
But I think you'd agree after seeing this
it's so
that Johnny and Saul were both equally powerful and magnetic. The
sure.
guys in the band used to say that when my father walked in the room, just like Johnny, people would just stop talking and turn. The guy just projected authority and power. And
well, you nailed it at the beginning of our conversation. You said it takes a certain personality to manage a type like Johnny Cash.
I think so, you have to be a star personality.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of these guys wanted to be musicians
right.
or wanted
it's
to be
spotlight
actors.
Without TV or movies.
Look at David,
that's what
look at David Geffen. I mean,
it's
he was
a different
frustrated
kind of spotlight.
Yeah.
David
yeah.
Geffen, you and you know this really well. I'm sure you've dealt with David.
Indeed.
Yeah, he's a spotlight guy. He's just not in the TV movie spotlight. Like,
oh.
you, regular people can't watch him. But he's in the spotlight of Hollywood and his business. Everyone's watching and he knows it.
Right.
And you need a certain type of personality.
But what I'm
for
saying
that.
Is you go back in these guys' past and you'll find that they did amateur theater or something and
yeah.
wants
right.
to be an actor.
Well, yeah, I mean, these are interesting stories that are worth being told. I mean, some people are like, who wants to watch a movie about a manager? You know, but I'm interested in these kinds of stories. There's a movie out right now about the woman, it's coming out, who was the secretary for the Beatles.
Yeah, the
when
Beatles.
When they were young.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah.
the same, and for the same period, it was like 12 years, the same about the same time.
Yeah, but that's more of a happy story, it looks
yeah,
like.
But that's like that, yeah, yeah.
help me with this.
I'm interested in those stories.
Why did
me
you
too.
Choose, to, how did you, no, not why, how did you choose to film the way you filmed the movie?
I'm glad
involving
you asked.
Involving yourself.
Right.
It's like the way you shot it with some reenactments, obviously.
Yeah,
and
yeah
some
just using a lot of things. It reminded
yeah.
me of The Kid Stays in the Picture.
A little
Robin
bit.
Yeah.
There was a little of that.
Yeah.
I got Errol Morris out of it
yeah.
a little bit, too.
Thank you. Well, that's a high compliment, and it's true. I did rip off The Kid Stays in the Picture mercilessly, a movie I loved. There are very few original ideas in the world today.
Yeah.
But having said that, I chose to do it this way, and I think the main question, or the main... The most obvious omission here for a documentary is you realize after you've seen it that there's no talking heads in this documentary.
Right.
Yeah.
So to answer your question, why did I do it this
I
way?
Like
why
that.
Did I shoot? Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan of talking heads. And my answer when people ask me, you know, why not? I say, why? We have 60 hours of Johnny and Saul
footage.
Telling their
right.
own story on tape over 15 years of the most interesting years of Cash's career, why the hell do we need to sit down with an aging country star and say, do you remember what happened in 1962?
Right. Yeah. Get Waylon Jennings and have him talk like,
yeah.
There's no need for that.
And plus, I found that their story was so inherently dramatic that it played out in my head very cinematically. And you said, why did I film it this way? So I'm not going to miss this opportunity to say that I shot 35. This is not video. It's not the red camera. I shot film because I didn't want it to look like Rescue 911 or 911.
Yeah.
You know, I shot it as because it's a period piece. It's the 60s. It's the 70s. I love the depth of field, the graininess. But most of all, it was an insurance policy against it looking like a bad episode of something like Cops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's not an expository film. It's a personal film. It's just not that kind of documentary.
So let me ask you how you put this film together, because you were talking about how no one wanted to give you any money for a film like this. So how did you put it together?
Well, there's an old saying in Hollywood where I lived at the time, and I thought I would make it here because I was, you know, familiar with this town, that it's easier to raise $20 million in Hollywood than two. But the more I got into my father's story, and the more I realized how proud he was to be Canadian, how emphatic he was about it. This was a guy who told Cash, if you want me to be your manager, I ain't leaving Canada, and I'm not moving my family either, so take it or leave it. And Cash took it. And he would travel the world with Cash with a briefcase with not one but two Canadian stickers on it. He was that, one wasn't enough. He was that emphatic. So I felt it had to be made in Canada. And I raised the money privately, which was very difficult because in Canada we don't get any kind of tax incentive to invest in film there like we do here in the U.S.
But is it cheaper to film there than in the U.S. overall anyways?
No, it's kind of a wash. I mean, the tax credits are pretty generous, especially in Ontario. At the time, remember, this took 8 years for me to make this film. People are saying, oh, Hollop's cashing in on the 10th anniversary of Cash's death, which, as you guys know because you're the hardcore fan, is September 12th,
September.
Is the 10th anniversary of his death.
Thursday.
Yeah, so as if I timed it. Well, it took 8 years to time it that way. but, yeah.
He was shooting for the 5th.
And it
just went too long.
Yeah.
I would say it's a wash when you consider the exchange rate and that everything is more expensive in Canada.
Yeah, that's fascinating to me because we were talking about Canada. Obviously, Jen's from Canada.
Where from?
Stealing the microphone.
Do your Canadian yap.
My Canadian yap. I'm from Toronto. So,
oh, fantastic.
Grew outside of Toronto in Queensville. So it's just kind of.
Did you guys notice that because we've lived in Toronto, we don't pronounce the second T in the word?
I did not know that.
Americans call it
Toronto.
Correctly.
You
Toronto.
Call it Toronto.
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 Like a Torino.
Is that how your dad did it, too?
Yeah. Well, yeah. It was Toronto. Johnny Toronto.
So imagine being a Canadian, not knowing about this story, that this Canadian guy was managing the biggest star in the world.
No, the more and more I was watching it, I was like, oh, my gosh, he actually is a diehard Canadian. It was just interesting to – it's always nice to see the connections that, you know, bleed through. You know, it's like loving Johnny Cash, and then all of a sudden going, gosh, his manager is from Canada.
And
his
so much of the Cash story takes place in Canada.
I know.
Johnny proposed to June in my hometown.
A lot happened in Toronto and Ottawa and
absolutely.
All of those.
Do you think that because your father was in Canada running Point, and your father was a huge Johnny Cash fan,
yeah.
Did your father, you think, do anything like concentrated to get Johnny to be big in Canada?
No.
Or is that just by sheer will?
Well, no. What happened was, first of all, he didn't didn't point him from Canada.
Yeah.
The fact is that back in those days, there weren't talent agents. They didn't come into until the mid-70s by California charter. My father was Johnny's agent and manager and produced half of his shows, including Carnegie Hall and the Hollywood Bowl. And in those days, they were called personal managers. They traveled with their client, and he was gone all the time. But what happened to make him big in Canada, and I've got a trivia question for Jen in a minute, but why he's so big in Canada and also obviously in Europe, in particular Ireland, is because he was arrested in 1965. What happens, as you know from the movie, and I don't want to spoil it, and I hope you got the phone calls from the movie that we sent over to play. Maybe you can play a phone call. But just to quickly answer that question, what happened was Cash was arrested for smuggling prescription medication across the Mexican border, and he was jailed in El Paso. And part of his sentencing barred him from leaving the continental United States. So my father petitioned the judge in El Paso to get Johnny released into his custody because no one would book him in the U.S. He was persona non grata. So Saul had to get Johnny out of the U.S. and work him back and forth across Canada for the next 2 years and across Europe. And consequently, Johnny became huge in Canada. And trivia question, which province of Canada consumes the most Johnny Cash product?
That fascinates me, and that's probably then how...
I don't know.
One.
I'm going to say Ontario.
Okay, well, most people would say Alberta because that's our Texas, right?
Alberta.
It is Quebec. You are absolutely right, and you win the prize.
Why Quebec?
Speaking of prizes, I don't know if you have call-ins or write-ins, but we can offer tickets to the movie in New York and L.A.
I'm about to get the information on that.
As giveaways.
I've got more
trivia questions to ask if anybody can answer them.
Oh, I'm not good at trivia. I'm not good at trivia.
There is Canadian history.
Is that like a class?
No, it is. I went back up to Canada for eighth grade, and I had to take the French and Canadian history. Meanwhile, I've been living in the States since I was little and was taking U.S. history. So when I was learning about all the wars, I was like, I know the other sides of that story, just not, you know.
I kind of want to take a Canadian history class. I think that could be fun. I do have some of the phone calls here. Hold on.
I will say before we go to a phone call, there is a restaurant outside of Chicago in the suburbs where I grew up called Superdog, which one drives up to and they serve you fast food. You push the button and they bring it out to your car. You order on a little menu. They're all separate, and I want to thank your dad for inventing that. I was interested to see that in the movie, where that came from.
Thank you. And not to mention the square hamburger.
Yes.
Four extra bites for your money.
Yeah.
I'm going to play one of the phone calls just to give you an idea.
Do you want me to set it up at all?
Yeah, I'm going to... Hold on. This thing takes forever to load, but yes. What? What are you pointing?
Point?
Set what up? Yeah, I understand. It's taking forever to load, so you want to give it a second? This fucking guy.
Don't bust my friend over here.
Oh, he's busted. Let's see. Which one do I want to do, though? Well, I think the one that's more heartbreaking to me is the one about the Johnny robbed me of my soul.
Okay, that's an audio diary, not a telephone call,
That's something, though, that is, like, really strong.
Yeah, that'll get me...
Do you want to do one of the calls, though?
It doesn't matter, but that one will get me lynched in the South, I'll tell you that.
Okay. All right.
Let's see here.
We were walking through O'Hare Airport one day.
Hold on. Should I play this? Oh, this one's the boy named Sue.
You tell me what...
I'm looking for the phone calls. Hold on.
It starts with dates, and you're looking for like 1972 or...
How about Johnny on Saul's hiring?
Sure.
That one's good?
Well, Johnny on Saul hiring June.
Yeah, you like that one?
Let me set it up.
Sure.
That's the other thing I didn't know about my father after he committed suicide. I learned more about my dad from reading his obituary than I did from the man in life, and one of those things was that he put June together with Johnny. And if you don't believe me, listen to the horse's mouth.
That's your cue.
Yeah, it's coming.
In late 61, we played the Big D in Dallas, Texas. And my manager at that time, Saul Hollis, said, we need a girl singer on the show tonight. They want more than just you and your band. I said, we'll get one. He said, what do you think about June Carter? And I said, I've always been a fan of hers. And I had, you know, I loved her work. She really entertained me. I said, get her if you can. So we booked June Carter on the Big D, Dallas. And then that night she did such a great job, my manager asked her if she'd work the next tour with us. So she did.
That is what the movie's like, though. You get, like, all this inside information, which, by the way, what I'm digging about it, too, is... There's no sense, you will never sit back, watch this movie, and go, well, I wonder how much of this is, like, on point or how much is bullshit. Because it's all recorded.
It's all secretly recorded.
Like, and he didn't even know he was, like, explaining what he's explaining. Like,
in that call, he couldn't have known a lot of things.
No, this
that
is not
was
a,
not, if you caught that, like...
Yeah, this is not a press thing.
I think she's great. Yeah.
No. What did you think of the movie?
Walk the Line.
Yeah, Walk the Line.
I liked it. They were obviously telling the love story, and on that basis,
right.
I thought they did a good job. I can't knock it except to say that, there are other music docs I like better. I still think that they deserve huge props for singing their own songs. I think Joaquin was robbed.
Yeah.
I think he should have gotten the Oscar. I think Reese should not have. I mean, hell, she grew up in Nashville idolizing June Carter. It's not exactly a stretch to play her on screen.
Right.
You know how the Oscars work. They award you for previous movies.
Right.
But I would say that one of the things that even myself as a filmmaker constantly forgets when I see these pictures is the disclaimer they put up in front of us in the theater that says based on a true story.
Yeah.
We still walk out thinking, oh yeah, that's cool. These people were larger than life and this was all true, but that ain't true. There's so much invented backstory and you know, merging and compressing of time, and that's common to narrative and fiction. But this is a documentary, and if it weren't all true and all real, I'd be sued.
And that's what's crazy about this, too. It's all real. By the way, we're going to do a little ticket giveaway as well. If you live in the Los Angeles area and are free this Friday night, that is September the 6th, we have a few free tickets for some lucky fans to see My Father and the Man in Black on the big screen the first day it opens at the La Mole Music Hall in Beverly Hills.
This is for all the players.
Yep. Yeah, for all the players. You slow, you blow.
Yep.
If you're interested, drop us a line at info@thematthewaronshow.com. info@thematthewaronshow.com. Or when they're done in the kitchen. Give me a minute. I can hear the whole, like, they're like catering a party back there. Are you sure? Are they good?
They're good.
Okay.
We're good.
Can I talk now?
Yeah, we're good.
Jeez Louise.
Info@Matt.
I feel like I'm missing out back there.
Yeah.
info@thematthewaronshow.com, please. And if you have to live in the L.A. area, because it's at the La Mole in Beverly Hills, I mean, this happens where people send in stuff probably all the time, and they're not in the area. So be in the L.A. area. We only have a few tickets, and they're going to go. They're going to sell out. They're going to go fast. So email us, info@thematthewaronshow.com. And just info us your name and information, and we will get you tickets for Friday night at the La Mole. And it's a great documentary to see. There's a phone call that my producer, Pat Tobias, loves from 1971 after Johnny became born again. That's the one he wants me to play. So do you want to set that one up?
Sure. Just do me a favor and give me a date on that.
The
name on the file?
It's 1971 Phone Call Israel TV special.
Gotcha. Okay, well, this call was made literally 1 week after Johnny was born again at a small church outside Nashville, which was 3 weeks after his network TV series, and you guys are too young to remember it, but he had a hit primetime ABC variety show called The Johnny Cash Show.
Yeah.
And that show was canceled.
You can get the DVD now, and it's awesome. It's really good. There's some really good stuff on there.
There is.
We discovered it.
But you're probably talking about the compilation.
You can
also get on eBay all whatever 75
sure.
shows. Anyway, Johnny decides that he wants to go in a new direction, and both creatively and, let's say, ideologically. Go ahead.
Okay. This is from 1971.
A month later, Johnny Cash was born again at a small church outside Nashville. Then Johnny called Saul.
Well, listen, Saul. I've got something else on my mind now. I've got it keeping me laying awake at night thinking about going to Israel. I would do a much better job at is talking and showing about Jesus and his life, you know. I don't know how you go about getting it on the networks, but it seems to me if I had Johnny Cash in Israel following the footsteps of Jesus, you know, for Christmas time.
I mean, now that you have told me, I'll break my ass trying to bring it about.
Well, Saul, make sure they understand. We talk about me being an honest performer. That Johnny Cash is not the same Johnny Cash that is around now.
Uh-huh.
If I do a television special on Israel, I should do it about the life of Jesus, right? Don't you think so?
I would say that in your own way, in a subtle manner, you will follow in the footsteps of Jesus without hitting him over the head with it.
Right, sure.
I still think that it should be labeled Johnny Cash in the Holy Land rather than Johnny Cash in Israel.
All right. Okay, sure.
So let me go to work on it.
Well, so I really do have a strong conviction. This is the only thing I want to do.
Okay. So that was from the 1971. Johnny's very strong conviction. He is a difficult man, you will see. But it's a fascinating, fascinating documentary. Is there anything you want to say before we wrap up for today's show?
Just please see the movie. It's an independent film, and it's not being spoon-fed to you by the Hollywood studio.
No, it's My Father and the Man in Black. And the one good thing about coming on this show is we pimp the independent films. We have an audience that loves independent films, or else I don't think we'd have an audience because what we love. And this is one of the great documentaries to see this year.
I'm sorry, my publicist is giving me the evil eye. I should say the movie is available for pre-order right now on iTunes and the DVD on Amazon.
Okay, so you can go to Amazon or iTunes and pre-order the film. And this Friday at the La Mole, it starts as well, correct, in Beverly Hills.
Lemley Music Hall 370.
Lemole? I like La Mole. Lemley?
Is that the Canadian way of pronouncing it?
Yeah, right?
7:15 showing, and by the way, it's being opened by a Johnny Cash band called the Mighty Cash Cats,
okay.
And it'll be followed by a Q&A with yours truly.
Okay, oh, and then you can go to johnny-and-saul.com as well, right?
Exactly.
Okay, so all right, johnny-and-saul.com.
S-A-U-L for Saul.
S-A-U-L, that's right. Jonathan, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thanks, guys.
Yes, thanks a lot.
I'm very appreciative that
I'm
you came
so
by.
I'm so sorry I was late, man.
No, it's okay. I could ask a million more questions, but we're running out of time. Jen, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're the best. Is there anything you want to plug or anything?
Not at the moment. Just love being here.
Are you going to come by more?
I am.
All right.
I will be here.
You're done hiding with your year sabbatical?
I am out. I will be here more often if you'll have me.
How? You're a Canadian guy, right, Jonathan? Are you still live there?
Hey, yeah.
You
so
still live there?
Where were you born?
I was born in London, Ontario.
Okay, London.
But I'm now looking after my mom on Vancouver Island, British Columbia.
So, so Jen's dad is like the biggest thing to ever happen in Canada, right? John Candy?
Oh, I didn't know that was your dad.
Well, there you go.
I worked with your dad many times.
Did you really?
I did.
Did you?
Yeah.
What did you work with them on?
I used to produce a show for 7 years called the NHL Awards on CBC and ESPN.
Yes.
And
Mr. NHL
was on the show a couple of times, and I was in his office.
John liked hockey.
Yeah.
No.
No, not at all.
Yeah, he was really nice to me and did me a lot of solids doing some stuff on camera for that show. And he was a great guy, and I miss him.
Aww.
That's great. That's really nice. Is there anything else you need to plug, John?
I can't think of anything.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Jonathan Olive. And Jen, I love you. You're
the
best.
You too.
You're the best,
babe.
Lee, you good? All right. Lee says he's going to give me some documentary footage of his own for next week's show of him doing some stand-up. Right?
Yeah. I want to see that.
All right. Well, I don't know if you
want to
see it.
I want to hear it.
Yeah, it's audio.
Okay,
you don't have to look at Lee.
Can you reenact it?
It's okay.
Can I reenact it? Yeah.
And thank you once again, 603 North Hollywood Way, Tay Chicago, here in Burbank, California. Arlene and Joe Montaigne, thank you very much for having us, as usual. Mini Deep Dish Pizza, come on by. And Chicago, come on by. Tay Chicago here on 603 North Hollywood Way, Sunday, Bears game, 10 a.m. I don't know if they're open at 10 a.m. I'll send Montaigne a text.
They open at 10 a.m.,
bro.
Early, you can get an omelet pizza.
It's Bears.
And
it's
a pepper
Bengals.
Next show we have, you need to start it with, "Hello, I'm Matthew Aaron."
like Eric Leray Harvey, who also joined us, Boardwalk Empire. Was that your Eric impression?
That was my...
Johnny Cash.
That was...
Oh, that's no good if that's your Johnny Cash.
What?
Yeah, that's no good.
All right.
No, that's no good. What? At 10. We are open at 10 here at Tay Chicago on Sunday for Bears Bengals. So here's your weekend.
It is
Friday.
Confirmed.
Friday, you're going to go to the Lamely. The Lamely?
Lemley.
Lemley.
I call it the Lamely. There's one block from my house. I go, I'm going to the Lamely. The Lemley in Beverly Hills Music Hall, right?
Right.
7:15 is the showtime. Okay.
Toronto.
Saturday, you're going to go watch your favorite John Candy movie. whatever you want.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
That's the one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Yeah.
And then Sunday, you're going to come here, 10 a.m. Bears. Bears, Bengals.
It's going to be a great weekend.
And thank you very much to Lee, Jen, Jonathan, Eric. Oh, and then Boardwalk, right? Boardwalk premieres when? Next week? This Sunday?
This Sunday, yeah.
This Sunday?
That's right.
Sunday night, then you watch Boardwalk. You got My Father and the Man in Black. You got a John Candy movie of your choosing. Uncle Buck, maybe, whatever. Then you peruse your way over here for some
and
Bears
a new
football.
Set of furniture from Broyhill.
And then you end your weekend with some Boardwalk Empire. Amen.
Oh.
Hallelujah. Matthew Aaron Show
out.
Just planned your full weekend.
What better way?
And we
when,
will be back next
week. When Rosh Hashanah
week
starts.
Because after next week, I'll be taking
Happy
a 2-week
year
sabbatical.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. 57, 74, I believe. I believe that. Well, you're laughing,
we've
but I believe that's the year.
We've been around for a while.
And next week we'll have a show before I take a two-week sabbatical. I'm going to Chicago. And so we'll be back next week. Thank you guys very much for listening, and we will see you then.